live to the call sheet. I'm Keith Coogan. I'm here with Gus, as always. We're also joined by a very special guest, my sister on the Waltons, Martha Nix. How are you, Martha?
I'm awesome. Because I'm with you.
Oh, very good to see you. Doesn't get much better.
Oh,
thanks. Very good to see you again. As always, everybody, we're always working on our top sitcoms of all times. I don't think the Waltons fits as sitcoms. It's more of a drama show. But call in 800-893-9562. We are live right now at skidrowstudios.com. Welcome to the call sheet.
Welcome back, buddy. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. How's it going, Gus?
It's fantastic. It's nice being here. I feel like I'm right here in the middle of television history, which is nice to be a part of. Welcome, by the way. Welcome.
Thanks so much.
It is a nice little mini reunion of some of the younger kids on the Waltons show. We were on the eighth season of the Waltons, second to last season, and had a whole run of the Waltons house and ranch and surrounding territories for a whole year. It was rather fun.
Awesome. And we even stepped foot on the Dukes of Hazzard's lot.
No.
Oh yeah, we beat Ike and Cora's gas station general store, and the General Lee would go whizzing by.
Really?
Yeah, and they had all the trashed ones right there. And then we slipped by where they did Fantasy Island and
wait for them to fill
the lake. And
that's so cool.
The back lot was awesome.
Now, did you guys know at that age what you were walking into? Or were you just like, oh, it's nice to be a teenager? Or are you pretty much thinking, are you aware where you're walking into basically already set up television history?
I think we were just doing another job. That was me.
Yeah, and frankly, I hadn't. Our family didn't watch The Waltons at the time. I mean, we're absolutely aware of the show.
You started in a hurry watching The Waltons.
Yeah, we started in a hurry. My mom had that, you know, those original big, huge VCRs. Oh, she was taping every episode, but they were like $500 back then.
It
was
ridiculous. Exactly.
And I knew it was a big show, and it was big for us and our family, for the pocketbook. I mean, a regular job. A full year, best, you know, as a kid actor working, you'd do several shows a year or maybe work 3 months out of a year. And the rest of the time you're in school. But for this, you're doing it 5 days a week. It was.
So did you guys were you the tutoring? Was that all happening at the same time? You guys on set getting tutored?
That was part of the best part of being on the Waltons.
Yeah, that's
we had.
That's nice.
Glenn Woodmansey, who was the.
Hold on.
Teacher.
Say it again. Say what's his name?
Glenn Woodmansey.
Okay, I thought you were saying.
And we just called him Glenn. He was our teacher.
Yes, no, fair enough.
And he was the teacher for all the kids on the Waltons for the 8 years before we were there.
And at the time, it was just Cammie Kotler who played
Elizabeth,
and the two of us. And the front part was the room where we did our book work, and there was a 50-gallon saltwater tank, and Glenn would dive in the Pacific and pull all the animals into the 50-gallon saltwater tank. Actually, I think it was probably 100-gallon. And then we'd have small little freshwater. And then we'd go to all the crew guys, and we'd say, adopt a fish, adopt a fish. We had them adopt each of our fish, so we had money to care for them.
That's
and
nice.
He took all of the kids on the Waltons through. And part of the reason we were cast was because Elizabeth had turned like 18. I mean, they were literally just getting out of the last of their school. Jim Bob may have been taking a GED at the time and been in the school for – he was in and out here and there. Glenn was helping him get his GED.
Yes, and he could do everything. I mean
– there was a full science lab in the back of the trailer.
Oh, it was awesome.
Really?
Unbelievable. Everything. All chemistry, microscopes, the whole deal.
Well, now, is an on-set teacher similar to a parent by the time you get – because like you said, you guys came around. He's already been through most of the cast. By the time you get to the third kid, the kid basically has the run of the house. The parents are like, you know what, just don't burn anything down, you're fine. Did you have this teacher already broken in? Could you be like, I read a book. I read a book yesterday, you're fine. Or was Woodmansey a hard ass?
He was
one of us.
There was things that were already going. They had a magazine. They had a
magazine?
Oh, yeah, we had a newspaper that we published every probably month.
Kids of the Waltons publish a magazine?
Oh,
he had shit for us to do, man. All right.
It was awesome.
Yeah, we would do these things that the kids on the Waltons had been doing for years. And Glenn was really great. He got us way ahead. I'd banked so many hours on the Waltons.
Because legally, you only have to have 3 hours a day. So if you have a heavy work schedule on one day, and then the next day is light, you'll pack in like 6 to 8 hours of school. So then you're kicking it for the next 2 days.
And it sounds like 6 to 8 hours of Woodmansey school is not necessarily the hardest work you've ever done in your life.
No, oh, if you're not on the call sheet, you come into the studio anyway and you go to school.
And we worked hard.
So you can bank hours and then take the next couple of days off.
You have to minimum 1 hour. So on an 8-9 hour shooting day for minors, that was really great for them to just do 1 hour of school. And school can sometimes be kind of recreational. And you could just, you know, really there was
throws a ball at your head, goes dodgeball for an hour.
A shot, and they go, do we have 20 minutes? Because you could only do 20 minutes at a time. Yeah, any shorter, 20. They couldn't count it. And they're like, well, if we have 20 minutes, send the kids off to school. So we're always running back to the trailer, and sometimes in really short chunks.
Yeah.
And so, like my kids, I'm like, you guys, why are we sitting in the car driving and you're not reading? I spent my whole life reading on the drive. I'm like, what's up? We're double tasking. Mom's driving, do homework in the car.
But mom, I only have 20 minutes. You can get a full segment done.
You can do a chapter in 20.
That is very
nice.
Oh,
I had banked hours. So by the time we finished the Walton season, I had leftover hours. 30, 40 hours or something ridiculous like that. And we sold them to another show.
What?
And it wasn't cash, because that was completely amoral and probably unethical or illegal. And so, but what we did was they arranged to buy that many hours or something money worth of school books. So I got encyclopedias.
Oh, books.
Yeah,
I got all these
books.
Hours. I thought you were selling your school hours.
What they did was they paid the other production in school books, which went to me, and then they got to take the banked hours, and it all worked out.
Yeah, you know, Keith really hasn't changed, I'm sure, you know, where he knows how to work the system.
I wasn't even there, and I feel swindled out of that. Somehow I lost 3 hours, and I don't know what the hell happened.
Before the internet, in the encyclopedia, was this 24-volume thing of beauty that you could use on all of your reports.
The World Book.
The World
Book. Or Britannica.
That's the one I think we had. That is very funny. Rumor has it that you banked so many hours on the last year of the Waltons that you graduated college at the age of 14, I believe.
It was actually 16.
16?
I graduated high school at 16. I entered college at 16.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you do that through banked hours?
I skipped grades. I came back from school, and Glenn Woodmansey was such a great teacher that I'd skip grades and started in advanced placement classes and was working grade levels ahead because of all of his work. I don't know if that happened to you, too.
You were kind of trying to show the rest of us up.
Oh,
I was so precocious
he
and obnoxious.
Was he that guy? Oh. Yeah. He was so brilliant, and they had to, like, figure out how to entertain Keith in the classroom. Okay, I've got this kid. He's
bored.
In fourth grade, but
distracted.
Give him Martha's work. See
entertain,
if he can do French.
Entertain or distract is the question.
Well, you know that kid who's bored in school?
Yes.
Yeah, always a problem child for... Oh, dude, he's right there.
He's right there.
I did all my work really quick, and I was bored.
And he would. He'd run around the trailer, which was our classroom.
Oh,
and Glenn would be like, hey, what experiment can we entertain him with in the back?
Yeah, that's usually what happened.
Yeah.
Well, now, how were the other kids? With the kids that were there beforehand that you guys are now coming in and not replacing but adding to, were they welcoming, or were they treating you like Oliver from the Brady
Bunch? Probably a huge distraction, and I remember that Cami Kotler was very focused on her finishing up her schoolwork, the last school work that she had to do. I totally bugged the heck out of her.
She loved me.
Suck up.
What a better answer that is.
See, I felt completely, and maybe I was delusional, but I felt completely welcomed.
Can it
and
not
you
be
were
both?
My distraction. Oh, wait.
Well, we played brats, and, you know, I want to cover this for the audience and everything. We've got some topics before we get into it. We've got some time, and we're going to get into some more Walton stories and talk with Martha as our official guest in a little bit, but we do want to cover some topics. We want Martha to join us. And also, anybody listening, please call 1-800-893-9562 with either your favorite TV show or questions for Martha or myself on the Waltons, other work that we've done. You have a great other resume, The Days of Our Lives.
I was right before the Waltons. I spent 3 years on Days.
3 years. Were you the youngest kid on Days?
No, Natasha Ryan was.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How? I mean, you were very young on there in the first place.
I was 7 when I started.
Wow.
See, you had more experience at working the like seasons of shows and spending a lot of time on the set.
Right. I would much have preferred to be on the set. I hated going back to school because I was the weird kid. I was from Orange County, and so I wasn't from L.A. There was nobody else around me. And it's funny because now going back to my high school reunions, they're like, oh, it was so cool that you were on TV. I'm like, you didn't act that way when we were
exactly.
in school.
Exactly. Where was that? Yeah, where was that then?
Yeah, and they just thought it was the coolest thing, but they sure didn't let me know that when I was in elementary school. So it was I was hated when they wrote me out of Days of Our Lives. They were supposed to bring me back, but they fired all the writers. Then the new writers were like, who's that? So then it was like, please, Lord, get me another job. Get me out of Orange County. And I landed in Walton's.
I have all these banked hours. Somebody yes. do something.
And see, that was before the Housewives of Orange County, and I still wanted out.
Did you commute up to Burbank
every morning? We left at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
We were out in the poor part of Malibu, and we did like an hour. It was an hour, hour 15 or so, but you really, oh
That's
my
why
God.
I said I did school in the car. I read in the car.
That's nice.
I did too, and my mom would be, sometimes after school, when I wasn't like working regularly on the Waltons, I'd have 2-3 auditions after school, because mm-hmm. you have to finish at 3, and then you can only really see kids up to like 5 or 6 o'clock. They'd be like, you gotta be 4 o'clock in the Valley, 5 o'clock you gotta be in West LA, and then yeah. back in Hollywood for 6:30.
Get on Sunset.
Yeah. And so my mom would be driving me to interview bad out of hell, and I'm sitting there going over like puzzle books yep. or reading stuff, and like she's doing 360s intersections with like semis coming at us. I'm like, everything's fine.
Absolutely.
Burning over the canyons, Malibu Canyon. She would do record time over those things. Very, very frightening.
All during your schooling.
Yeah. Homework time.
That's got to be really tough though to do that, and then like you said, try to go back to school where you haven't been there, you're the new person every time you come back, and then you disappear, and then you come back. Tough age. Also tough to go from, hey, I'm in the car with my mom, which I was going to be anyway, but it counts as school, as opposed to now I got to sit in an actual classroom for the next 6 hours.
Yeah, I think it's like military kids, brats, that move around a lot or go to new schools a lot. It's almost like a new school. You've been gone for 9 months or something like that. You come back a whole other grade. They're like, what?
Who are you? Well, and you're in that situation. I remember coming back from the Waltons. I was starting junior high. I was in seventh grade, arriving in February. And it was like, I walk in my classroom. It was an indoor seventh grade. And I walk into the school. And it's, you know, it's the 70s. So all classroom doors are open. So literally everybody can see you walk
the
in the door.
The Chautauqua method.
And it was like, I walk in the door and they were like, tick, 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 tick. And everybody froze, turned my way and looked. And I thought, do I take another step towards them or not? And then they all came toward me. And then I was like, can I have your autograph? Can I? And I'm like, this is a D&D situation. If I give it to them, I'm a snob. And if I don't, I'm a snob. What do I do?
What did you do? Did you give them autographs?
No. And then I was a snob. But this eighth grader came and befriended me. And I just found her on Facebook and we had lunch. It was awesome.
That's cool.
I said, you made such a difference because you said, here's my locker. I'll be your friend. I won't ask you for an autograph.
Facebook's great for finding old bullies or like old friends like that.
And yeah, I found you in Facebook.
Old bullies.
Absolutely did. Yes. Yeah, yeah. You did find me on Facebook.
I did.
Yeah.
And now we're friends.
I'm going to poke you.
Please don't.
But in school, on the Waltons, the Waltons are a pretty family show. But the set.
Yeah, that poke you joke would not fly in the Waltons.
No, it would on the set.
Oh, on the set. Absolutely.
Oh, on the set, yes.
On the set, it was
you had a
completely different world.
Really?
Yeah, not what you expect.
Oh, I learned how to play gin with all the drivers. It was awesome.
Yeah, there was lots of cards and dice and magic tricks I learned from a lot of the crew. But just the language. I remember one crew member daring me. One of the good nights we did, I had to say, good night, Virginia. And he said, I dare you to say vagina. So there I am on the soundstage. They did this at the end of the day in the kitchen. And the whole crew's waiting around to go home. Oh, God. And we're all doing our good nights. And like, good night. Vagina. That didn't really go over well.
Really?
But,
nothing.
No, and there was.
Were you the first person to laugh?
I don't know if it was because they've been doing it for so many years. The creator of the show, Earl Hamner, he could say some things a little off color sometimes. You go, really? Creator of the Waltons? But it is Hollywood. It's still the entertainment industry. And so there's probably a desire to go far away from that image and, you know, you have to, like, shake that off, the goody two-shoes kind of a thing.
Any chance it was just the performance of the vagina line that didn't get him? Is there any chance that was it?
The performance of all my lines, Gus. But honestly, I have to say, I did look, the DVD came out, and I watched as many episodes as I could handle. Because it's hard to watch yourself as a kid. You're just unforgiving. But I was actually proud of my work. This is weird to say, but I do an attitude thing. I sass off Ralph Waite. I'm like, you go do it or something. I say something to him and I'm like, oh, I'd smack that kid. I would smack him immediately. So I guess it was
And you know what?
Worked.
I was the character who got to do it. I got to take the ace bandages and wrap his mouth shut. That was the best episode.
That's nice.
You remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do.
14 takes of that, did you do?
I don't. One was enough. It shut him up.
That might be a system we need then, if that still works.
But on the Goody Two Shoes thing, I was reading, and you had a note here, that there was a 19-year-old college student who founded the No Cussing Club.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not passing any judgment, but I know the cool kids in my high school were all part of the No Cussing Club.
No, they weren't.
That's the
empowerment of finding those dirty words and flim, flarm, flarm, and saying them and, like, shocking adults was great.
I barely got through that sentence without dropping an F-bomb. Go ahead, keep going.
So, but they founded a No Cussing Club, and 35,000 of a group tried to get the Modern Family pulled this week because Lily says fudge, and they block it, do false censorship, do a bleep, and you think she says the F word.
Yeah.
All 2-3-year-olds say whatever language is percolating around. I've totally witnessed it. I've taught 3-year-olds how to say the worst things on the planet. So it was totally true, but I can't believe this No Cussing Club. Why?
That was just yesterday, by the way.
It's harmless, you know, don't you think?
There's so many parts of that story that are ridiculous. First of all, the fact that there's a No Cussing Club is ridiculous.
What about the virgin clubs?
35,000. He's claiming there's 35,000 people that are in the No Cussing Club. Seriously? I didn't know there were 35,000 people that say cussing, which, first of all.
260 million, however many million people in the United States, doesn't surprise me. 35,000, actually, that's not a lot.
Well, the thing that surprised me about it, you're going to try to get it pulled. He says fudge. He doesn't say the word. Just change the channel. If it offends you, change the channel. But you have a hard time with them bleeping out a kid saying fudge. I think you're trying to draw the line. And then you need to get that pulled so nobody can see it. I think you're drawing the line for
it. And I saw it. It was so harmless. She said it a couple times in the episode, but it was totally harmless. It was absolutely hysterical, and that kid's ridiculous.
Always room for fudge. Always.
That's my pronouncement. Ridiculous. Do you watch Modern Family, Martha?
Occasionally.
It's a great show.
Did you see the fudge episode?
I didn't.
You did not?
I was probably doing homework with my kids.
That's all right. I heard it was filthy.
The
homework was filthy.
They should get rid of homework. That's what they should get rid of.
As long as they get through the homework with the kids, or you?
Yeah.
Do you do it in 20-minute segments?
Yeah, like I told you, my kids have not learned.
Shit doesn't work.
The stresses that were upon me.
You have 12 more minutes. Learn. That would be nice. Now you teach them.
I try.
What do you think gave us ADHD? We're like, what we're doing now? We're working. We're back to school.
No, because we had to focus. There was no room for ADHD.
Stuff full of McDonald's and Hampton's hamburgers.
They're grilled cheese and jam.
Oh, God. We ate the worst food. Sometimes they give us time to go off the lot, and we just get fast food around.
But you remember the time we left the lock and Glenn's car was burning?
Yeah. His VW bus was engulfed
in flames.
In flames at
this
the gas station.
This is our
station.
Teacher.
Really?
Oh, I mean, huge fireball.
And your mom, I think, was driving. We're like, there's Glenn's car.
Is it on the side of the road? Where is it?
It's in a parking lot.
It was like in a gas station parking lot.
And we're like, Glenn, what happened? It caught on fire. So I sold it to 2 drunk guys and gave them the pink slip.
Really? I'm assuming you guys haven't told this story for some time. So in hindsight, do you guys not have more questions about your teacher?
No, see, Martha's, she played my older sister, and she's just a few years older than me. But I was only 8. I don't remember the pink slip story. That's ridiculous. Wow.
That was Glenn.
Oh, man.
That
nice opportunity.
There's so many shady things. I don't even know where
he taught us.
I mean, seriously, rarely am I speechless, but there's a lot of questions I want to ask and all at the same time about the man. Well, it caught on fire, so I sold it to 2 drunk guys.
Yeah, 2 drunk guys came up. Hey, dude. And he's like,
had the pink slip on him.
Yeah.
Well, why not? Just
in
case the car caught
in fire in the car.
Somehow he grabbed it.
It's like, hold on.
Well, here's the thing.
Let me get the textbooks out first.
Glenn lived in his car.
Not anymore.
So all of his clothes were gone. He was
really?
Down to one outfit and the pink slip.
Which he sold. Which is no good. He said, I have to upgrade to a 4-seater or a 4-car, a 4-door. Is that what he said? What?
Actually, I think he started sleeping in our classroom.
Wow. I wasn't quite aware of all this, but he was such a great teacher for me.
He was.
Are you backing away? Are you slowly backing away?
No, not at all. I ain't backing away for anything.
I don't know how to ask this question any more bluntly than what the hell was going on with your teacher?
he spent so much time with us, and his life was...
Thank God. Otherwise, he would have been in a car that spontaneously combusts.
Yep.
Is that not a concern?
I forgot about that. I completely his van aflame.
Yeah.
It's the most dangerous teacher ever.
And you know what? He went on to many, many shows that are iconic. He went on to, what's the one with all the girls in?
It's a good start.
Just the 10 of us? Or
no, there are three little girls, and their mom died, and their dad lives with the brother. And
Full House?
Yes. He went on and did Full House. And then he went on and
chops
did...
on Glenn.
I would have taken the rest of
the hour. After Full House.
And then he did, what was the twin? Sister, Sister.
Wow.
Those are the ones I ran into him on
audition. Full House ran forever.
Ever.
Wow, that's great.
And so did Sister, Sister.
It was so good of him to show up at the reunion. A few years back, we had a Walton's reunion, and they were all, Keith's here. And I hadn't attended any of the other reunions. I checked it out. It was really,
it's okay.
Really
they invited me, and they're like, "We found you." And I said, "I didn't know I was lost."
Thanks, I'm right here.
Facebook
so wasn't out yet.
Yeah. Oh wow!
Yeah, I was pregnant with my daughter, and she's 13 now.
Where was the reunion?
Beverly Hills. Yes.
Well, we had one in the Valley. There was one at just over the hill. And I know there's one coming up too. Ray, you were talking about that.
The one coming up.
Yeah.
It's hopefully in September.
In September. There's going to be another Walton's reunion in September.
Yeah.
At the Hollywood Museum.
Because it's the 40th anniversary of the show.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Is the teacher going to be there, by the way?
Who knows?
Ray,
but he came out.
Is the teacher going to be there?
Absolutely.
That's who we care about
that
being there.
I'd love to see Glenn again.
You know more about the burning van.
That's all. I just want to know if it's out by now is all I want to know.
I totally ran across our newspaper. That we published. I couldn't believe we put that together. That was really cool.
We were pretty doggone talented kids.
That's right.
What happened?
Turns out you guys didn't realize they had you working for other people the whole time.
Like,
these kids could pull it off. We could do two magazines with these kids.
You know what? We also planted the garden for the show for the prop guide.
Holy
It didn't
crap.
Come up, though.
Like, you know what? These kids, we can do our gardening. We get two magazines out.
They called
a
it
newspaper.
Agriculture.
And this is between them working. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So they're all worried about these kids sewing in Cambodia, and they just, work us in Hollywood.
Were you on any mood-altering, amphetamine, sugar, caffeine, anything that as a kid? Did that come up, or was it just basically... Because for me, I chowed on donuts at craft service. I ate
so
much sugar on the set.
I mean, you were fed the spread at least twice a day, and bagels were always there. I liked the bagel. Well, and I liked their commissary had great bacon and tomato sandwiches. That was almost every morning.
Two chocolate glazed donuts before lunch. Easy for
me.
And I would be, and then probably comatose by 3 o'clock.
You were never comatose.
No, you just washed down another donut.
Yeah, you just went for
I thought I was pretty well behaved and professional young man, but apparently I was a brat. My mom was like, "You were just getting out of control." We were done with Waltz. Yeah, that was it. Too much more of that, and it would have been ruined you. I think it was ruined already. Absolutely.
You were up to 8 donuts a day. We had to stop the show.
Ralph Waite wanted more shows back. He's like, "You're just doing too many episodes with these kids. Get them out of here." Like, Ralph, but I get that he thought I was a method actor or something when I was telling him to go chive it. Do you approve of Toddlers and Tiaras, Martha?
Oh, gosh, no. Although my daughter loves it.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you put your kids in pageants ever?
Well, my daughter, she's 13, and she's like, she doesn't know how to say, she doesn't think of the word vicariously, but she's like, "I'm so tired of people living through their children."
You know what? She pretty much said it.
Yeah, but she's entertained watching them do it. But it's just, it makes me sad. And the dancing, one where the lady's just chewing those kids apart and tearing them apart.
We talked about Dance Moms a few weeks ago.
My God. How they're not in jail, I don't understand. Like I said, right off camera, there should be child services. She's hanging out right there with like a big fishing net.
And she says, I've made them. And it's like, oh, gosh, lady. No, it's hard work on their part, and they could go to another teacher and have the same and not be chewed apart and humiliated on every episode.
Now, did you
see?
Did either one of you guys see online when they had the kids from the Toddlers and Tiaras and whatever that show is, and they had it's hard to say with a straight face, I apologize. And they had the kids were all I believe it was Go-Go Juice is what they called it, which looked like Mountain Dew, and they only kicked into that when the bag of pixie sticks didn't work.
Yeah, so after 14 pixie sticks, and that wasn't doing anything. And then they went for a little bit of Red Bull.
They have to dumb them down a little bit from all the eye plucking and waxing and this they're doing at three-year-olds.
I wouldn't sit still for my mom to brush or blow dry my hair. I had the bowl cut in the 70s and 80s, the total bowl cut. And it would take a little while to, like, and she'd be hitting me on the head with the brush, like, sit fucking still. I can't imagine these
that
kids.
And they go through
tanning.
Mom, too.
And oh, absolutely.
No go-go juice for you to wash down the donuts. That's not happening. But I don't, well, you know what? I mean, I guess I used to play sports and I used to play sports without hurting myself, I should say. And, there was a lot of caffeine or, you know, no dose or something along those lines when you get to college. But we're talking, and I'm not saying that's healthy, but when you're comparing that to, hey, here's my five-year-old. Let me dress her up like a pinup model and then give her as much Mountain Dew and Fun Dip as I can jam down her throat. Something seems a little bizarre about that.
I think there's a disassociation there. The kids are like, I'm wearing the pretty woman outfit. Really?
Oh, that was the worst. I saw that. I saw that.
And they're like, well, we didn't let her watch it. And, you know,
we didn't let her know what the whore boots meant. But, you know, she looks cute in them. Are you kidding me with that?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we haven't talked about it on the show yet, but I have a nonprofit that exists to stop childhood sexual abuse. And when I watch this, I'm like, they are, you use the perfect word, desensitizing. They are desensitizing the child and they're making about their sexuality. And those moms aren't thinking through that at least 1 out of 20 of the men who are watching that show are perpetrators. And they're not looking at their daughters like, isn't that cute? They're looking at them through very insidious eyes. And they just don't think about that. I was at one of my daughter's performances for junior high. Huge room, little girl, 3-4 years old. She actually reminded me of me, the toe head, adorable. Well, she starts taking off her shirt and dancing around.
No.
And I'm like, what do I do? And she just kept, you know, let her be free and, you know,
it's
dance
funny.
Around. And I'm thinking, lady, there are 1 out of 20 of the men here are not looking at your daughter with the right eyes. Put a shirt on. But I had no relationship with this woman. I thought, how do I broach that subject area in the middle of this Christmas concert?
Tough.
You know?
I don't even think, like, Selena Gomez is a Brothers of Music video for Selena Gomez. And my nieces and nephew, they're, you know, ranging from like 3 to 9. And they're watching like a Disney Channel and everything. And all of a sudden the music video comes on and Selena Gomez, she's so heavily made up. I mean, really tarted. I couldn't believe it. I was like, really? And then on the beach with this outfit and stuff, I'm like, you know, maybe she's 16 or whatever, but they're playing this as an interstitial on Disney between the channels.
Right.
But Toddlers and Tiara goes so to that extreme and Dance Moms as well. But in general on TV, you still see, you know, these short skirts and this like a tween thing going on and the over-sexualization of these young girls. I decry that.
That freaks me out, and it freaks me out when they do it when you have a 12-year-old with Juicy on the shorts that are barely bigger than a belt. That freaks me out because, especially in this town, you can't tell until you get closer. Then you're like, oh, shit, I need to turn myself in. Because 3 blocks ago, my blind ass went, oh, what does she look like? And then I got closer, and she's 14. You're like, oh, good Lord, I feel miserable.
They're also forcing the 50- and 60-year-old cougars to dress no longer like 22-year-olds. Now they have to dress like 14-year-olds, which is... You know,
I like that you had sympathy for the cougar.
I had sympathy for the cougar in there.
That's very. Damn, cougars get no love. That's tough. But no.
Why do you think runway models are stick thin and have no developed chests? Because we're skewing it younger and younger and younger. The whole media is doing it too. And we'll address some of that later and some of the great things that are happening to help kids. You know, focus. I always, you know, I'm anti-censorship and I'm anti, like, I think kids should be able to read any book that's in the library. But media should have a little more responsibility, especially. And, you know, it's like, I don't mind Lily on Modern Family, you know, cussing. That's different. But her dressed up in the pretty woman outfit is a completely different story.
Yes.
Well, and the thing is that parents have to be involved in watching with their kids. Because, like you said, on the Disney Channel, they're popping in this video and you go, and your 9-year-old's sitting there going, okay, Ryder, why do you think mom's having a heart attack right now? You know, and it's not just to switch the channel, you know, and just make it disappear. Because in my son's brain, it's still there. because I brought up that we went to a skateboard shop, and I look, and these two women are barely dressed and making out on the back of a skateboard in the photograph. And
where's the skateboard shop?
I'm so glad you asked. Thank you.
Who makes the skateboard?
From Orange County on the other side of the curtain. But I'm like, okay, Ryder, let's talk about what you saw. You know, what's mommy's problem with that? You know, and teaching him how to respect women, and, you know, that they're trying to really, you know, confuse him and make him think about these, but having those conversations with him so that he doesn't have to go to school and go, okay, guess what I saw? Tell me about it, you know, and because that just opens up the door, especially with the access to the web that they can get on and search this and get more and more and not know what to do with
That's
what they're seeing.
That's gotta be the scariest thing, the web. I was 14 years old. I had to sneak a Playboy from my dad. You know what I mean? It was like there's no comparison to what kids could type in. Oprah famously was like, yeah, there's a term that kids could type in. It's totally innocent. You know, they're in school and they love to play water polo and swim, and they type in water sports. Oh, you're screwed.
Oh no, I put in Pink Panther.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I was looking. Panther is the mascot for my son's school, so I'm making a flyer as the room mom. And Pink Panther, that's not the Pink Panther. That's not either. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
And because this is what the porn industry is doing. They're sitting down and go, how can we hook them younger? Pink Panther, Scooby-Doo, water sports. When I was a teacher, we were doing endangered animal reports. And one of my students put in flying squirrel. And boy, did we get a flying squirrel real fast. But fortunately, it was a long time ago when the images came like this way. That's a naked male chest. Holy moly, okay, delete.
Yeah, I would assume it's almost impossible now to control what they see. And it was impossible then almost, but... It's impossible now to control. All you can do is what you're saying is explain and try to make them understand. Because even if you controlled it in your house, if you got rid of your TV and your computer, which if you're going to do, you should give it to me, but I don't think that's happening. But if you got rid of that stuff, still, you know, he's going to go to school and he's going to hear it.
Or one, I read an article on a 12-year-old who she really wanted a iPod.
Yes.
You know, not an iPhone, but an iPod, and that still can go online, and, you know, you could download a game, and like a skateboarding game I have, and it's still got a pretty provocatively dressed skateboardist that's, you know, female or whatever. She's really good at aerials. I don't know. I don't know why I brought that up. But the guy that runs I read him in the article, he said that, you know, he approves every single app that's on there, and, you know, she can't go on internet unless he's there. He has to, like, log it into the Wi-Fi. But they're sitting there in their living room, and she goes, and gasps. And he comes over and looks. What? A neighbor had named their Wi-Fi router an offensive term. And all of a sudden, I'll let your imagination run wild.
You don't want to do that.
It could be absolutely something you don't want a 12-year-old saying. What does this mean? It was more racial than it was sexual. Yeah. And still, that's the type of thing. How do you protect, even on an iPod, when that window comes up to see available networks? So he's like, how do I get around that? I'll turn that off. And, you know, still, you have to be so on top of it today. You know, billboards are coming at him. And
my daughter's friend came up and she goes, someone just called me. She said the N-word. And I go, they can't say that. And she's like, well, everybody says the N-word. I'm like, but they can't. I said, you're not black. You cannot say that. And they say E-R, not A. You can't do that. And she's like, well, he said I had a big butt. And I'm like, okay, wait, I'm sure there are rules at your school that you're going to be suspended if you start throwing around the N-word. You can't do that. And they just think, well, everybody does it. Well, everybody shouldn't.
Yeah. No, Michael Ritchie, and you could be booed off the stage for that.
Yeah, Michael Ritchie.
Well, we talked about this last week. You were talking about Florida, and you had used a great term for Florida.
Old Juville.
Old Juville, which
Catholic,
I cannot say that.
Let me tell you something. Catholics can get away with pretty much everything. Are you kidding me? Are you absolutely kidding me? You guys, well, which by the way, before I forget, because it cracks me up, that have you seen the ChristianMingles.com ad, which is on every, like, 45 times a day?
Christian Mingles. I was familiar with J-Date, but I wasn't familiar with J-Date. Christian Singles.
By the way, J-Date, and I hope this isn't a secret, it can't be, it was in my best man speech, but J-Date got my brother and his wife together, so if that's
fantastic.
Somehow a secret, oops, sorry. But I'm assuming it's not. But Christian Mingles, which cracks me up, because I'm just thinking, are they having a hard time finding each other? It's 90% this country. good for you, but it can't be that hard to find each other.
Every Sunday they kind of have an opportunity.
I would assume.
Yeah, but if you've
so.
Grown up with that same people, they don't have the same, you know. You're like, I've known it. That would be like the two of us being together, you know?
No, or cousins weird. Or something like that. That would be weird. Although, approved in more states than gay marriage.
Yeah, well,
you can marry cousins in more states than you can have gay marriage.
You can marry cousins in certain states?
Yeah, first cousins. And there's no law against it in California.
No promises about what will come out, but. You know.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Flip a kid.
is that true, though? You can marry cousins in certain states?
Oh, and most of them. In like 32 states or something. There's no laws on the books.
Nice. Good.
And on that note.
Yeah, that's good to know. Good tangent.
Well, nepotism rules. We got to keep creating people that can stay in Hollywood.
That is.
We don't accept new people.
That is a little bizarre. Do you, either one of you guys watch American Idol? Started this.
Love it!
Yes.
Yes, and I love the bad auditions.
Did you see the Korean guy, though?
I was disappointed there was more good singers this time.
Yeah, there were.
This is the only time where I will watch it all.
They were, like, good enough, but it wasn't bad, funny bad.
There wasn't anybody like, dude, wow.
No. That's the thing. This is the only time I want to watch that show is when there's going to be comically bad people. But by season 9, what percentage of really, really bad people are just trying to get on TV, do you think? As opposed to, holy shit, I'm bad? I didn't realize I was bad.
There was a lot less of that. This week.
And I'm going to spoil it because I know someone who, as an actor, played a character and went on American Idol and did something ridiculous. And they were on like 2 seasons ago. I'm like, I know this guy. And that's not his name.
Really?
And so, yeah, there's some that are absolutely set up. They're completely fake. Can you believe anything you see on TV?
You just got sued.
I just
American
out
Idol
is
just
really, I
sued just, you.
Uh-oh. So allegedly, I think. Wait, what did I just eat? I don't know.
Do you think Randy Jackson ever accidentally turns on the TV to the X Factor and sees the other two judges and goes, oh, shit, I missed the show? You think that ever happens?
I don't know. My husband just passed him at NAMM in the crosswalk. So if they shot today, yes.
Oh, did he say, what's up, dog? I'm assuming that's what he says. The only thing I ever hear him say. But God bless him.
What's up, dog? I was a little pitchy.
Dude, that's got to be weird.
You know what?
You're
he didn't dog it this week, though.
No.
He didn't dog it. The show is changing.
He's looking for a new term.
Really?
They've got to compete against X Factor and The Voice, which I watch The Voice.
Oh, I love The Voice.
But
The
X Factor is the same show. Is The X Factor not the same show?
It is. It's American Idol with a completely different name, so Simon Cowell can make more money.
And it's The X Factor with two of the original same three judges from American Idol.
Yes.
I mean, it's more American Idol than American Idol, is it? What's the twist?
They had like the old group. They had groups. They had young people, male, female. They tried to make categories, you know, so that you got the 40-year-olds got the empathy vote.
Oh, okay. Oh. That's
and like all the kids that didn't make it, they made them a band, you know.
The misfit band.
Nice. Well, I mean, that was the one thing that drove me nuts about American Idol from season 1 through what are we on now? 900? Are we on season 900?
Officially.
Yeah. It is a it's that. As they get eliminated, they start joining these tours and these albums and you're like, I don't know who these 6 people are. Why are they putting out album after album after album?
Oh, and the second, the runner-up has more success at their albums.
Almost
usually
always.
The winner, yeah.
Is Ruben
Except
Studdard
for the
still alive?
Year,
is Ruben Studdard alive?
Yes.
Didn't he win?
Yes. Okay. But Clay... Yes.
I haven't seen him.
Clay whatever, can... is now on The Apprentice.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Remember his new face? We talked about that.
But I don't watch any reality TV at all.
I'm addicted to reality. You don't watch any reality TV?
No, that was a load of
crap. That's why I'm looking all around the room.
You know, we have a running topic here on the call sheet, your favorite sitcoms of all time. Martha, what's your favorite show? What's your favorite sitcom?
The first one that comes to mind is Home Improvement.
Oh,
Add it to the list. That's add it to the list. I never thought of before.
I already had it's on the list.
Every Tuesday night, all of our single guy friends came over and we all watched Home Improvement and laughed because we weren't alone in how we talked to one another.
Every argument with my girl, I'm like, do you watch TV? You realize this happens with everybody. I mean, this is exactly the same totally cliche thing that every couple goes through. So I'm not alone. Yes.
That is great. That had a hell of a run, too.
Yes,
that was on for a while.
You know what? And what killed it was when the younger actor decided to go to college because he was so stinking good.
Yeah.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
Yeah,
I believe so. I knew he had 3 names.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Just add 2 names before
JTT.
Thomas.
Sure. Yeah, everyone knows that.
As soon as he went. But that's, you know, doesn't that happen on a lot of those sitcoms? Once
really
the kid
does.
Gets older, you replace Gary Coleman with a little redheaded kid.
I thought
or Or you guys.
I'm sorry. The kids were an afterthought on the show. It was all Tim Allen. I mean.
I understand. No, but then that kid became awesome. Huge. He
that
became
kid
huge.
Made that show after. I mean, Tim Allen was still
Tim
very
Allen
much
was
there.
The show, but
he
made that.
Stole it.
Yeah.
And ran with it.
And he was a huge marketing for everybody under the age of. Anyone that's watching a Disney something loved him for a handful of years. And yeah, no, he took off for a while.
But he was an amazing actor.
That happens. They go somewhere, and then all of a sudden you try to bring in somebody else, which I don't think they did, though.
No, they really grew the two parts of the other two boys, but they just...
Apparently that didn't work. although...
Well, the way they developed the characters, you know, too, didn't work as well.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be the actors or the writing. But.
Right. But either way, yeah. And to their defense, it was like, what, season 9, 10?
They were very
like
far into the show.
So,
absolutely.
I mean, that's a great run. That's a great run for any show. Okay, here's.
Oh, I see Tom and Huck. That's right.
Yeah, you don't remember Tom and Huck?
No, I remember Tom and Huck. I remember my friend Brad Renfro. Before he passed, he had said that he hated Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Really?
On the set of Tom and Huck. That's right. Total dirt and no disrespect
good,
or anything.
Good post-mortem like, dirt you're going to throw
yeah,
out
like,
there.
He's like, I
nice.
Can't stand that guy.
Is there a reason or are you just going to come with some unsubstantiated dirt?
Probably the amazing success he's gone through. And he's, you know,
that's why,
really.
That's why I hate him.
He's, you know, he's great looking. He's the whole thing. And I think he was probably Tom. And so I can't say that for sure. Let me. IMDb, help me, please. Jonathan Taylor Thomas was Tom. And so Brad Renfro as Huck Finn was just bitter just for the heck of it because you're Huck Finn.
Oh, gotcha. Well, Huck Finn ended up getting his own thing. He didn't struggle all
he
that
He has
much.
A book of his own in movies, yes.
He has his own island in Disneyland, does he not? Does Huck Finn not have an island in Disneyland?
Didn't they just get rid of it?
Oh,
no.
You disappointed me.
Oh. Yeah, I'll be leaving now.
Yeah, and scene.
Oh, man.
I forget they just did some big transformation down there, and I don't know.
Probably right. Everything that we know is they closed on Universal, closed, they changed Back to the Future ride, which was my favorite simulation yes. ride. They changed it to The Simpsons, which seems weird because The Simpsons has been around for 20 years already anyway. So it's not like they updated it that much. But. Changed that ride to the and I went there and we went back and went, oh, we gotta go to Back to Future ride. No, you're too old. You're too old, dude.
Don't they have King Kong 3D?
They do.
360 3D, three something.
I saw it the one time I went. Have you guys ever gone to Universal on Halloween? Have you ever gone to the Halloween Fright Fest?
No.
Make us scream like a little girl thing?
No, I think I went to Knott's on one of those weird days.
We have Knott's Berry Farm in Orange County.
Yeah, I've never done that, and I've always wanted to do that. I've heard it was great.
Oh, you absolutely have to do it.
And I had only been in one of those haunted house type things where people are supposed to run out and scare you.
They do.
And I was with a buddy of mine, but my buddy's 6'5". They're not looking to scare the 6'5 guy.
We did one of those houses.
When?
Oh, yeah, we did.
I just made her remember. So right at the Waltons
I got pointed
time,
at, and I didn't know if it was because he had
right
to go to the bathroom,
time,
you know?
They said, well, we want you guys to be in one of these haunted houses.
Yeah. As in and, working in one
yeah,
of the
yeah,
working
yeah. one, and scare
nice.
The crap out of people as they came through.
That's... And it was so funny. We're standing there with a sign completely still.
We're in a mannequin room with strobe lights and like checkered patterns and mannequins. But we're also there with heavy makeup looking like mannequins frozen. And as people walk through, we...
And they'd touch us and they'd be like,
yeah, or we reach out and just grab them. Or yeah. I'd do a little awesome. Head turn or something like yeah. that. We scared the... I took mime at the time, so I was all into it.
Oh, yeah. We did it. We took it together.
We took mime
so.
Together?
I think
you're right.
You know what, though? But I dropped right. out because you were better than I was, and I was...
You dropped out because no. he was better at mime?
No, yeah. I had my mime career came to an end on the telethon, on the Jerry Lewis telethon. They had a KTTV, they had like a side studio for it. And they're like, Keith, you're going to do a bit of mime. Like, great.
We had
like,
the Binky Shepherd book of mime. Whoa.
Yeah. Do you remember Mum and Shantz? Anyway.
Oh,
so,
by the way, this is already the biggest mime flashback I've ever seen in my life.
So they're like, okay. You're going to go on, you're going to do 3 minutes, which would be great. So I have this whole story.
You probably don't know what mime is.
Like, this is the most mime story I've ever heard.
No, I'm ready to go out and do this great mime out, the whole thing. And they go, actually, we got to cut you back. You got like a minute.
You panic. Can't get out of the
I
box.
I panic. I'm like, I'm just going to do the box. I'm going to do like a banana with a garbage can and slip in this
no
whole
time.
Thing. And I went, fuck it. I'm going to the box.
Got no time to get out of the box.
At least you had a talent minute. I think I was answering the phones. Martha Day, the Waltons.
How many?
Do you remember that?
And nobody wanted to talk to me.
Well, were you actually answering the phone, or were you miming the phone answering?
No, the mime was here. Remember, I left the class. I wasn't very good at it. I'm actually having a complex about how bad I was at mime because you were so good.
My mom thrust
and you blew
tap
your
dance.
One moment.
I blew it, and I was done with mime.
Just stuck with it. Dang
Come man. On, mime is money.
You could have been miming your ass off right now.
Mum and Sean.
Yes, Mum and Sean.
You know Mum and Sean?
I have no idea what they
were
talking about.
We went and saw Mum and Sean's together, the most phenomenal mime.
At the Schubert or something like that, right? In Center City?
Was it? I thought it was in Westwood.
You're absolutely right. And we saw Mum and Sean's was no dialogue.
They were like in black.
They wore weird foam cubes and things. You didn't know if they were standing upright or not. And they had a caterpillar thing. It was like an accordion, just a tube, looked like a
air conditioning tube. You can tell we're from the 70s, can't you?
Dude. Oh, my God. It's so cool. It's so tubular. Oh, my God.
Like,
gnarly.
What
this is
talking
gnarly
about?
Thing. Yeah, Mum and Sean's for anyone out there who remembers.
We loved you.
Hey, Jeremy, is there a webcast going? Do we have a camera in here? Because perhaps they can mime this story to me. Would be nice. Do we
Go for it.
Oh, my God. Get your ass out of the box.
I'm miming.
That is fantastic. There's no pressure on you. I know you're a dropout.
No, see, I will not do it in front of him because I will not box well enough.
By the way,
I'm miming. You're in a box. Oh, God.
I can Vogue. Oh, wait. Wrong era.
It still counts. It counts. In my book, that's a mime. You're miming right now.
Great story, though. Has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I was just at a friend's funeral, and a friend of mine walks up to me, and he says, yeah, I know.
No, it's an uplifting start.
Great.
It's a good start.
You know. Anyways, so I used to teach cheer professionally, and my friend walks up to me. He says, hi. He goes, do you remember when I first saw you at UCLA? He goes, I knew nobody, and I saw you, and I'm like, Martha. He goes, I walk up to you, and you go, shh, I'm a tree. Don't get me in trouble.
I'm a tree.
Because I was a dance major at UCLA, and it's down the middle of Bruin Walk. I was a tree, and my friend tried to talk to me, but I was waiting for the signal to make into my next tree motion. So I had to say, shh, don't talk to me. I'm a
Did
tree.
You take dance? Was it like jazz dance?
No, we were modern before modern was popular. And like I told him, you know what? I was before my time because now they call those mob flashes. But we were doing that in the middle of Bruin Walk, and everybody just thought we were a bunch of freaks
back
were dance
then. It was
majors.
Just crazy, but now they got a name for it.
Yeah, they it's those, flash those mobs. Those dance people, and you know, now there's So You Think You Can Dance, and they're doing what we were doing, and everybody thought it was weird.
You should show up to those shows. Be like, it's about time, people.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Where have you been?
Yeah, and show my scars.
I saw a 2-person flash mob in New York City in Times Square. 2 people got up and started dancing.
Is that a mob?
That was
that
it. It didn't catch.
Mob?
Nobody else danced. Nobody else
Is it a
was
flash
heard.
Couple? Is it a flash couple? I believe.
Yeah,
what
it's
that
a flash
is.
Moment.
Normally a flash couple gets you some time behind bars, I find. But not in this case. All right, let's take a quick break if we can.
Yeah, that would be a great idea. I have a bladder like a hamster. Everybody hang in there. We have some great period music for you. Depression era, kind of a Boxcar Willie Jones thing. Enjoy. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go back to New Orleans. You know it hurts me so. Babe, I'm way down here. You know I'm way down here. Babe, I'm way down here in a rolling fog. Baby, please don't go. Please don't go. Baby, please don't go back to New Orleans. You know it hurts me so. Babe, I'm way down here. You know I'm way down here. Babe, I'm way down here on old Parchment's farm. Baby, please don't go. please don't go. Baby, please don't go and leave me here. You know it's cold out here. Babe, I'm way down here. You know I'm way down here. Babe, I'm way down here on old Parchment's farm. Baby, please don't go. You know it's cold down here. Baby, it's cold down here. Baby, it's cold down here and on old Parchment's farm. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go and leave me here. You know it's cold down here. I'm half fed down here. I'm half fed down here. I'm half fed down here on old Parchment's farm. Baby, please don't go.
Thank you so much. That was absolutely great blues music back from the day. Let me pull my information from my handy pocket. We have Baby, Please Don't Go by Big Bill Broomzy. And thanks, Martha, for coming to the show.
Oh, it's a blast.
Now, Martha Nix, we started in 1978 working together on the Waltons. And, you know, favorite show. This is kind of a mini reunion for us.
Absolutely. I mean, for that year, we were like brother and sister. We fought like brother and sister. We got on each other's nerves, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. And we produced 26 episodes or something of a TV show.
Absolutely. And
got paid for it. And I'm sure that affected your household.
It was the first time I got to drive a car.
Oh, when you ran over the flower bed?
Of course.
Yeah. First time I got to smoke cigarettes.
Yeah. And we got to, steal chickens.
Were you known as a good girl or a bad girl before doing the Waltons?
I was always the girl who was the snob or got in trouble on shows.
You always.
Although on Days of Our Lives, I was the nice girl that got kidnapped and a lot of,
the nice girl that got kidnapped.
It always happens to me.
Is that
nice
a thing?
Girls.
Is that a.
That's a category?
Yeah. Well, I was in Florida as a kid and a woman said, "You're here, you're here."
What?
And I'm like, with my family on vacation, but Joanne kidnapped you and you're here. You're actually at Disney World.
Wow.
How do you react? Do you slowly back away or do you smile and play through?
I kind of didn't know what to do. I'm scared of how this woman's living her life and thinking that I'm really Janice Horton and she's not calling the police even though she thinks I've been actually kidnapped.
She doesn't want to get involved.
Yeah. What would you do?
Did you get a lot of fan mail from that show?
I don't remember the Walton fan mail as much as Days because a lot of convicts watch Days of Our Lives. And
is that true? Is that a true story?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Charles Manson used to watch, and maybe still does, Days of Our Lives.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. He's got some time.
Oh, yeah. He's got a nice color TV. Maybe you could get his, if something happens.
Hopefully something happens soon.
I hope Manson doesn't have internet. He's like, hey, I'm poking you.
Yeah. That's kind of fine. Yeah.
Charlie Manson asked for your request in Cityville. He just watered your flowers in Castleville.
Yeah, he now has a farm.
Charlie would like you to join the family.
Yeah, that's a different virtual game right there.
Oh, dude.
There are many family members active out there. And they have a public websites and
what are you talking about?
Absolutely, and they still absolutely follow Charlie and they're waiting for him to get paroled.
Is this what do you call it, bullshit? Are you making stuff up right now?
No, that's absolutely true.
Really?
Careful out there. The internet's a wild, wild place.
Really? You got a Manson following still? Because it's working out well for him so far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I had gotten my most fan mail. I'd trickle of here and there maybe, but on the Waltons is when it did. I started to get enough fan mail to really notice and have to address it. So you had gotten creepy fan mail.
Oh, yeah.
On Days.
They asked, the one I got, can we have a cheesecake picture of you? And I'm like, what's that, Mom? And she's like, why don't we put on a...
I still don't know what that is. Holy crap.
You only know what beefcake is. So.
I don't know what any of this stuff means. You crazy kids and your terminology. I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
That's terrible.
It does, well, I'm assuming based
on
the
story. Well, look at all we were exposed to as kids.
I got letters from 40-year-old men that, well, and I'm now a 40-year-old man, that wanted to be my personal assistant.
Okay.
At 10 years old.
I wonder what they meant.
Yeah, I wonder what they meant. Woo-hoo! Yeah. And so, and I had always taken a fan mail. I'm like, you know, not, millions of people may watch your show. But you get, you know, maybe several hundred or a thousand letters or something like that. That's mm-hmm. still a very, very small percentage of the fans that actually contact you.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, and most of the letters are great. Oh, I love your show. This is great. But then you get the letters that are like, You know, oh, the show's great and everything. And my sister, she went to the mall. And then, you know, I was looking at the shoes and she's like, really? And you become this person that they're talking to. They know you're in their living room and they really do. So they must have broke out when they saw you.
Oh, we had
people absolutely believe what they see on TV.
Yeah. And we had at Days of Our Lives, they had to take my letters and the FBI got involved. In
really?
One of them.
Wow. That's what I wanted to. Yeah,
You just blew him away.
You blew
did
me
you
away.
See that? Blew him away. Really?
Oh.
Now wait. Now how did you?
Did
I mean,
you see it with your own eyes?
Remember,
or was
I'm
it screened?
7 or 10.
That's what I'm saying. Did
I
your
don't
parents
really
beforehand? Did somebody else see that, or
nobody
did you
else.
Read it and
I mean,
you broke out?
They just came to our dressing room and we and somehow.
How'd they know?
Happen.
That's what I'm saying. Did you look at the letter and be like, "Well, this doesn't make any sense," or did your mom say that, "What the hell's happening here?"
Evidently, an adult. I mean, I would get ones where I was. I mean, whether
what
it be,
many? Wait, wait, wait,
know,
wait,
a lot
wait.
Of our fan mail was opened.
What's the exploding? What's the exploding teacher's name? What's that guy's name?
Arts.
What's the guy's name?
What are you talking about?
No, your teacher.
Teacher Glenn.
Glenn. Can we assume?
Glenn.
Can we assume Glenn?
We don't think of as exploding because he was really mellow.
Can we? Well,
yeah, he was really mellow.
Well, it all depends totally. On whether you're in a parking lot, apparently, or not. Can we? Can we? I'm in my head. Glenn called the FBI. Please continue your story.
No, wrong cast.
Really?
Wrong show.
No, yeah. Days
show?
Of Our Lives.
Days of Our Lives.
But we get a letter because it would be addressed to your character. It would be addressed mm-hmm. to the studio. It would be addressed to ABC. It would be addressed to your agent. And so various people would absolutely screen your mail and slit it open. You get your mail and it would be either taped back up or just opened at the top. I got a lot of mail that was already open. Maybe because
that
we were
part
kids.
Of my mind's gone. I don't know.
Well, I was gonna say either
that 4 year age difference gone.
Oh, mine's shot through like Swiss cheese. Absolutely.
So we're filling each other's holes in right now. So.
But I would assume I'll let that one go. I would assume though that it completely blew me right off course.
And call
that comment,
we're right. Live. If you're listening right now, it's SkidRowStudios.com. We're live. Call in for Martha, 1-800-893-9562. If you have a question for us or your favorite TV show, that's 1-800-893-9562. We're going to be hanging out for a little while longer. We don't have to cut it immediately.
I have nowhere to go.
At the hour mark. I'm not going.
Are
you hanging out for a little bit, Martha?
Yeah, okay, I'm
you
in.
I took her keys. You were fine.
You're just going to have to toss me your wallet.
Now, I would assume... I would assume that most of the stuff is from kids. I mean, is what percentage would you say? No, most of the letters are from adults.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, as children, most of the letters you got were from adults.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, so absolutely. Shows you that I know almost nothing.
There and you know, I don't want to be, you know, unfair, but and this is looking through the mind of a 10, 12-year-old or whatever when looking at this kind of a male, but you know, some people were very special. And, you know, you could tell that when you're reading the letter. You could tell through language. You could tell through penmanship. You're like, okay, you're 32 years old and you write in all capital block letters.
Okay, no, that's different. That I understand that's different.
It's like shouting on the internet when everyone writes in all caps. I love you. You're great on the show.
That's great. Although when somebody, I did do that once when I first early internet and somebody said to me, you know, I know you don't mean anything by it, but please turn off all caps. And I'm like, how fucking sensitive are you when my caps are driving you nuts? Yes, that's how I meant it. I meant, how is your fucking family? That's how I meant it. But you're shouting at me.
Turn down your computer.
Usually I know when I'm pissing people off, but oops, I bumped into the caps lock. Sorry, my fault. Sorry, tangent. My fault.
Just throw a little LOL at the end and everybody will know you're just fine.
Man, and in real life, everyone's going, there's no laugh out there. That's the funniest thing ever. I'm going to say I was laughing out loud. It's like, I'll be polite. LOL.
I only write it when I mean it.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
Oh, I throw LOL out all
do
over.
Do you really?
Oh my God, I toss them out like Pez.
No, if I'm literally reading someone's email and I'm at Starbucks and laugh out loud, I let them in on the secret that I just laughed out loud in front of random people.
That is nice. But you never type something to somebody else and be like, oh, they may take that seriously. Oh, let me throw an LOL in there so he knows I'm not serious.
You can never tell tone in emails. Oh,
no, that's what I hate.
Oh, I'm a sarcastic bastard.
I LOL my ass off when I'm texting stuff.
Do you think, Martha, I have to ask you a question, because I'm hearing that I was a little bit more of a brat than I thought I was.
This is a surprise to you.
It is.
Oh,
it
wow.
is.
Okay.
It really is. I mean, yeah.
Have you met you? Or you haven't met you yet.
Desensitized.
Am I that big of a bastard? Oh, my God. If you think Keith Coogan's a big bastard, call in 1-800-893-9562.
Yeah,
you're here. You can address this here.
It sucks when the guest beats me to the joke, by the way. That's even worse. Nicely
well, it's your
blended.
First guest, so you know, you'll get used to it.
Yeah, I really have to thank
sadly,
you for coming
I will.
In, Martha.
Oh,
I appreciate
yeah.
that. We're doing this little experiment, the call sheet, and me and Gus, we talk about Hollywood and fun and news and topics, and I really wanted to bring you in.
I'm loving it. Do you remember at the Kids' Choice Awards?
Yes.
I hadn't seen you probably 3 or 4 years. I was probably 15, and you were with your grandpa.
Oh, nice.
Is it the Youth and Film Awards?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, you said Kids' Choice, Nickelodeon.
I'm sorry,
and stuff.
I'm confused.
Oh, okay.
Because that was before, the Kids' Choice Awards.
It was a little Oscars for children.
Yes.
Maureen
Dragone.
Does it
exist anymore? What is it?
No,
it
is. It's running right now. It's called the Young Artist Awards.
I'm sorry.
But it used to be called Youth and Film Awards. Mm-hmm. Maureen Dragone runs it. She's part of Foreign Press Association, and she wanted a little Oscars for kids. Kids often get, one, two nominations out of,
well, even
10
more
years.
So now it happens than it did during our time. I mean, there were very few during our time. Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Q Crickets.
Exactly.
Tatum O'Neill.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
really rare.
Nobody got recognized during that time. And I was so excited because Keith was at the Youth and Film Awards. And I see him across the room and tears come to my eyes. And I'm just like, for me, it was the world because this is like my long lost brother. And I got icy cold shoulder. Hey, how you doing?
Oh,
and now that I have a 9-year-old son, I get it.
What a
but
dick.
I was so broken.
What a dick.
I don't want to. I don't want to.
I changed my name.
I don't want to be
that
too
Keith
blunt.
Mitchell, what a dick.
I don't want to be too blunt about it. But what
we have a caller.
Dick.
I want to take a caller. Hey,
a
we have Gary from Allentown, PA.
Oh, I'm so excited. Hey. We have a caller. Oh, sorry.
We have a caller. I have to go there. Hey, Gary, how you doing tonight?
We don't talk like that here. We're Dutch. Hey, nah. Pennsylvania Dutch territory here.
Thanks for calling.
Gus is rubbing
Gary.
Off on us. Sorry.
Yeah, it's my phone. Sorry about that.
I just do that when I go to the phones. I talk like that. Sorry.
Hey, you guys are great, and you should be very proud to be involved with the Waltons. Great show. Great show.
We are proud. Oh, we absolutely
but
proud.
But I want to hear more dirt from the set. I have a big crush. I had a big crush on Aaron, so give me some Aaron dirt, please.
Oh, Mary, Mary, Mary.
Nice.
There is no dirt on Mary.
There's always dirt.
No, if anyone really reached out and was nice to, at least me, Keith doesn't think anybody liked him.
Apparently, I thought
I thought everybody liked me.
No, Mary was really, really nice, and she still is.
Yeah.
She was really cool. Cute.
We had no cast crushes going on. There was nothing going on.
I had a huge one on David Harper. And when I saw him as an adult.
But he got really scary later, didn't he? I mean, he was cute when he was little, but, by the time you guys came along.
I was in love with David.
Apparently not enough to scare her away.
Oh,
I had to share a bedroom with David and. Remember that?
Oh,
I got stuck in the.
You got to.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got all the serious talks on his bed.
You guys worked with the great Peggy Rhea.
Peggy Ray. Yeah, Peggy passed.
Speaking of Dukes of Hazzard. She kept working.
Oh, Peggy was amazing.
Peggy worked more than all of us, I have to say.
Absolutely.
She had a much better career than any of us.
She started on I Love Lucy.
She was cousin. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. She was cousin who?
She was cousin Bertha on All in the Family.
Oh, wow.
She literally was on every iconic television show.
She showed up, I think, on 2 episodes, and on both of them, Archie would say, who the hell are you? She would show up crying at a funeral.
Was she on Grace Under Fire?
She was on Grace Under Fire.
See, she just kept working.
Peggy was great. And she was an amazing woman. I actually was like the only person actor-wise at her funeral last February. And but it was just amazing to look at her career. And she was so loving and so kind, and she was like a grandma. She gave my daughter her favorite stuffed animal. And she stayed in contact, and just an incredible woman. You never would have known she was huge Hollywood. And I was so sad when they did the memoriam for so many people in Hollywood at the Emmys. Peggy was not up there, and if anybody deserved to be up there, it was her.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Sure. I remember I always bought her struggles, her she'd be sweating or trying to do something and be flustered or whatever, and I totally bought it. She was always, she absolutely sold me on her conflict she'd built for her characters.
Yes.
She was really, really good, and it was just amazing. When you look at her resume, Peggy is absolutely a Hollywood legend.
She is, and she's one that's gone unrecognized.
Were you guys too young to appreciate the stories from the older actors, like of stuff that they had done before, and you know, like Will Gear and...
Oh, I had great, great respect for Will Gear, and he'd passed just a season before we came on. And Ellen Corby had had her stroke a year or two before, and it was the season she'd come back.
Yes.
So we had Ellen Corby. Our first episode had a moment where the family goes up to Will Gear's grave and says goodbye to Grandpa and goes up again. And I remember, he had a weight over the show. Off the set, we had a Christmas party, and the cast plays roles in the Christmas party. And that Will Gear had played like Santa in the past. And they gave me the part. This 8-year-old kid, they're like, you're going to play Santa.
Well, who could replace Will Gear?
I had like 5 lines, exactly. And I was like,
do it.
He had like 5 lines. I'm sure he did them a lot better than I did.
Keep Keith busy.
Keep him busy.
To keep him out of trouble.
Wow, was that
my memory served me right, Keith? When you came on the Waltons, I remember thinking that's the kid from the realtor commercials.
I did a series of Century 21 commercials.
I remember, and I don't know why that's still in my head, but I remember thinking that's the kid from the Century 21 commercials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your mind is a trap, my friend.
I had another sister. Sorry, Martha. Rachel Jacobs played my sister, not only in Century 21 commercials, but also on Super Train. I think we worked together a couple times or so here and there. But Century 21, it was all kids pretending to be the agents and the families, even the dog. There'd be a kid on all fours. And we used like places in Angelino Heights, these beautiful Victorian homes. And they even made a miniature one for like the dog house. It was a series of 5 or 6 commercials, paid great. They ran forever with the little yellow jackets and everything. High ceilings, low floors, and a playroom for the children. And they're available on YouTube. Great. If you look up Century 21 and put in like 1977 or something like that, or like 70s Century 21 commercial or in kids, you'll totally see the ads are on there and they're a trip to see. I can't believe you remember that.
That's a great
crazy.
Call.
That's so cool. Well, I'm like, I'm walking IMDb. I mean, I was around before IMDb, so,
Weren't we all?
You guys were a part of the great era of television, and, it's gone. It sucks now, but
we're vicariously living through other people's lives instead of creating new characters.
Do you know what they shoot on? We shot the Waltons on Stage 26 on Burbank Studios, TBS. The Burbank Studios, Warner Brothers lot. And I was there at an audition, and I walked by Stage 26, and they have a plaque outside. And it shows all the things they've shot on Stage 26 over the years. After the Waltons, Designing Women took over.
I remember that, yeah.
And after that, a couple other shows.
That's a long break between those two of shows that are not worthy of getting their plaque.
Oh, they did features and stuff, too. Currently, there's a little show called...
What kind of stuff was in there before that, the motion pictures?
They have it on the plaque. I actually put it up on my Flickr. Believe it or not, if you go to Flickr and put in Keith Coogan and look up my Flickr account, there's a shot of all the shows on it. The current show on Stage 26, the little show called 2½ Men. I don't know if anybody watches that.
Oh, please.
But can you believe there are 2½ Men is on our stage?
That's funny.
And I went around. I looked at where our trailers used to be and where we'd go to school and run off to lunch. And I was like, yep. Where the bathroom? Remember the bathrooms around the back?
Well, of course I remember the bathroom.
And from the bathrooms, you could see Boss Hogg's City Hall.
No.
You could see the whole Dukes of Hazzard Square from the bathrooms at the back of the Walton stage.
That is very funny.
I got a bathroom story from Warner Brothers. My not my first time out there, but I pinched the shit out of my finger in one of the bathroom doors while waiting for the tour at Warner Brothers Studios.
Ouch.
The top of the door. Now, you guys were too short, so you couldn't get your hand up there. But
how
somehow
do you know we were
top...
too short?
You were.
They called me armrest on the show. I was armrest, and everyone would put their elbow on
my finger before this tour. And I wanted that damn tour, you know. I thought I better not lose my finger before that tour. And then I got lost on the tour, and I wandered around, and I was on the set of...
you just follow the trail of blood back to where you started.
I'm sure you got lost.
Now.
Wait, what other sets did you see? Did you go crawling around the back lot?
Well, it was right before, what do you call it, Lois and Clark debuted.
Oh, wow.
So that dates it. It would be, what, the early 90s. And they were setting up a green screen thing out in the back lot. I mean, honest to God, I walked all around the back lot and finally found the tour when it was finishing. And she
there
said,
he is. Get that guy.
The guy who's low on blood.
Well, I had gone into the bathroom to look at the bathroom on one of the shows.
Yeah, because we had
on,
really
on,
special bathrooms.
On the set. And so she said, come back later. So I went and killed time and had lunch. And I came back and I took the next tour later.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Let me ask you this before we lose you. Favorite sitcoms of all time?
Seinfeld.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is a hard one.
Seinfeld, All in the Family.
Yeah, both on the list, both classics. Seinfeld, hard to argue with. All in the Family.
But I think Seinfeld has all the great shows in it. You know, I Love Lucy, All in the Family. It sort of sums it all up into Seinfeld. So I think Seinfeld. There'll never be another great show. I'm really fearing that.
One of the only sitcoms that I have a family is The Center. Seinfeld was extended weird connection of people. There was the evolution of the sitcom family into Full House, where it's broken families. In the 80s, yeah. There was all these Mom's Dead, Let's Have a Party shows, My Two Dads, Full House. It was like, where's the freaking mom in this situation?
An interesting way to word it. Mom's Dead, Let's Have a Party
That's
show.
What these shows were.
It's a nice way to word it. That is,
yeah, they were. And
I'm
then
seeing this 10-year-old brat now
Seinfeld.
That I didn't know beforehand. I'm seeing him.
It evolved into Seinfeld, and they're all self-centered. George and, you know, Jerry, and they're all completely narcissistic. But they're a family because they're all alike in that way, and they share that complete bond and hatred of all of the rest of society.
Yeah, it's exactly right. You somehow still care about it. You hear Jerry talk about it in interviews, and he says, people would say, oh, we're just like you guys, and he'd what the hell is the matter with you people? Have you seen what these characters do? What is the matter with you? But yet, everybody has
you know,
one of those.
My friends and I are constantly quoting things from Seinfeld. You know, it's really hard not to go through a day without
something
saying something from Seinfeld. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, that's. I mean, and you also if you watch. You'll watch a rerun to that, and you'll go, oh, I remember this. And then you'll see the secondary storyline. You'll go, oh, that's the same episode? Oh, it's that episode, too?
Right.
That happens all the time. On that.
Rumor
I
was.
I own every season on DVD, but yet I'll still sit and watch it on TV every night here at 7:30.
My buddy's dad moved to Florida, and he happily told me his dad's at the age where, you know, he may forget a thing now and then. So he goes, oh, I bought him season one of Seinfeld. He just keeps watching it over and over and over again. I said, is that a joke? He goes, joke-ish. I think after a year and a half, he'll probably go back through it and enjoy it. Yeah, well, they're good. They're damn good.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in, Gary. Thanks for the blood trail and the bathroom door story on the back lot. I've never took a tour of a lot other than like Universal Studios tour. I never did that, like toured Paramount or Warner Brothers. I've got to do those tours.
There. You guys were working,
working there.
We were the tour.
Warner does a really good tour. It's a good tour.
Right on.
Well, at least it was. And I haven't been out there in like 8 years, but it used to be a nice tour. This guy had been around for the longest time who was in charge of relations. You know, he worked for Jack Warner.
Wow. Do you remember we knew our guards. And also back in the 70s, they had what was known as a smog alert. And so when you pull into the studio, there was a sign at Warner Brothers that would say second stage smog alert or first stage smog alert. Remember that?
What is the smog alert? What does that
breathe
mean?
Breathe less.
Yeah.
Breathe less.
Don't be outdoors.
Seriously? That's what that means?
Yeah. And you would taste it. You would taste the pollution on your tongue.
Great, we have 12 hours of exteriors today. Fantastic. Try not to breathe.
Exactly. Exactly.
I just have to mention, Martha, I'm looking at your picture here they put your picture up on the website. You look great. Beautiful.
Thank you. Isn't Photoshop fabulous?
She's lying. She looks great for this angle.
I need the Gaussian blur to get rid of the crow's feet I have.
I'm going to leave you with this, Keith. My brush with greatness. My first time in L.A. was 89, and I'm standing in front of Mann's. It was Mann's then, Grauman's Chinese Theater, and you came running by. You were trying to meet up with friends or something. You ran up to the booth or something, and you ran by, and I turned to my friend. I said,
and that's exactly who he is. Couldn't have said it more clearly.
My grandfather answers to that.
It's so funny. My grandfather, like, he had this great fame, but he also clinged to it in a weird way. And he had the rumor because they knew the Coogans, they knew the Graumans, and he said, "Oh yeah, no, I have a footprint at they put the box office over it." Like, you're full of shit. So I don't know why my grandfather would lie about that kind of thing. There's no Jackie Coogan thing there.
No.
You're joking.
No, I'm not kidding. I'd heard this rumor that my grandfather
But maybe that's what you were doing.
You were begging the guy to let you look at your grandfather's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was probably seeing, like,
now you have to push Elmo out of the way.
The Exterminator.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I do go to the movies a lot, and I'll even see really bad movies.
Oh, speaking of Elmo, you know that those people when they come up and goof with you, then they expect money.
$5.
My video camera
on $5 right now.
Guy,
yep.
Yeah, we
I'm
had
taping this guy, and then I start to walk away, and he says, "How about some money?"
Yeah, well,
<that's>... And we say, "If you had better costumes, maybe we pay you."
I was gonna say, there's a reason he's dressed in a superhero.
Well, you know what? The funny thing is, his ass was showing. The thing was split open.
Oh,
was
that you? With the beer belly.
Was that
really
you?
Funny,
I was
actually
working overtime that night, by the way. By the way, that shit usually costs extra. I was furious you didn't tip me. I was furious. But it's okay. You look like you were the guy that was bleeding all over the studios.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for calling
in,
Gary.
Buddy. Really. Thank you very much for calling.
Absolutely appreciate it.
I'm glad you're running overtime. Great.
Oh, sure. We'll talk a couple more minutes here.
Great.
Thanks, Gary. You have a great night. Thanks for listening.
Have a great night, Gary.
Seinfeld, of course.
Yeah. Well, Seinfeld was smothered all over. Here, I'll tell you who we have so far. I'll tell you who we have on a list in no particular order.
Okay.
Happy Days. We put Welcome Back, Kotter, which probably isn't making the list, but I put it on.
No, not top 10, but it's in there.
Seinfeld, Cheers, probably in the Welcome Back, Kotter category. Mork and Mindy, because did you work with Robin Williams?
Yes, I did the last episode of Mork
and
Mindy.
Yes, you did. I knew that story. That is fantastic. That's another reason. MASH, hard to argue with MASH.
Top 10.
You knew I was going to put the Dick Van Dyke Show on because I had a big crush on Black and White Mary Tyler Moore. Specifically Black and White Mary Tyler Moore. It's like I have emotional problems.
Gus thing.
I have emotional problems.
He's hot, man.
The Cosby Show. I told him
Laura
at one
Petrie,
point, the Mary Tyler Moore show, I actually got up and turned the color of the TV off to see how that worked for me. I have.
You know, I think it does really good things for the crow's feet.
Oh, man. There you go.
I know.
Just turn this color stuff.
The color
I must
now.
Have been a really brat back in the day. She just keeps attacking
me. Am I just getting even? Oh, maybe I'm actually... I was cast as the brat, so maybe I really am.
We were both brats. That's true.
It's years of sibling rivalry. That
she was more pathological liar and kleptomaniac, and I was more pyromaniac and...
On the show.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
On the show. We're pros. We learn our lines. We go to school for hours a day.
Well, and I mean... My sister's 16 years older than I, so I didn't have a sibling that I... You were my first sibling.
Aww,
and see, I was adopted on days, so I didn't have a sibling there. So I live vicariously, you know, through that.
What storylines did you see on days? Like amnesia and kidnappings and what... You were kidnapped, right?
You were definitely kidnapped.
Well, okay, so I was adopted by Mickey and Maggie, and... then the biological mom came back to take me, and so there was a dream of, you know, me being split in half to go to both parents, and then Joanne kidnapped me and took me away, and then ultimately gained custody of me.
Which half?
It doesn't confuse a 7-year-old at all.
No.
You're like, what do these adults want me to do? All right, fine, whatever.
Yeah. You know, and then next I was stealing things, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the stealing thing, they weren't filming anymore. That was a problem. But we all have that stage. We're fine.
We were good kids, I think, in general.
We were hardworking kids. And we were kids, and that's the point. We were truly kids, but we knew how to be professional, when to be professional. But Glenn allowed us to be kids during school time and, mm-hmm. and on our lunch breaks, and we had a good time.
I love Glenn.
You like Glenn Whippensy, don't you?
I love Glenn.
I love Glenn.
Right
so
off
much.
The bat, you like Glenn.
I love Glenn so much. I had this weird,
I'm very proud of it, one take Mitchell. And it's either because I'm so bad that you're just not going to get anything else.
Well,
so
you got older. I've called you one take Coogan. So, you know, I didn't even know that nickname. So that's.
Did he just call you a cougar?
Coogan. No, I pulled that off on your movie. You directed with me in it, which was. That which is really good. But I would pull that off. We also didn't have a lot of film.
You saved me so much film. It's like, what? No, what? Oh, shit. That's all we have? What are we? Oh, we just got Coogan takes. Oh, we're fine.
Keep that. Just move on. All right. We're good.
Fine. Keith, I have one take for you. Okay, good. Not a problem. He was fantastic, dude. As professional as could be, it was almost annoying.
Well, I saw a shirt on a crew member in the Waltons, and it was, where's the coffee? What's for lunch? When do we wrap?
I remember that.
Do you really?
I just right back.
That's hysterical. Yeah. That's a great shirt. That is a great shirt.
And that he was. So and everybody adored Keith and how he could just land it.
That, yeah. I mean, that's especially people that are used to working for the last however many years on that show and want to get the hell out of there.
I read a thing on Michael Learned. It was when she was leaving. And we were on the season when she did her last episode. Right? Didn't we do this season?
I got nothing.
So Michael Learned was number two on the call sheet. And when she left the show, they gave her this shirt with the number two. And it was really cute. But she said it was just exhausting. She's like 8-9 years into the show. She's like, to pull this off every week. She's like, I'm tired. I mean, I'm tired. And if I'm not working, I'm doing press. I'm doing this. She's like, it's absolutely exhausting. So I understand why they brought. And they gave us great episodes.
I
was watching some of the DVDs. I was like, I can't believe some of the things they had. Total stories. They've totally ran with us for like 20 of the episodes. It was ridiculous.
Right. And it was strange for me. And I've only seen a couple of the shows over because one of the fans, he actually taped them for me before the DVD came out and he sent them to me to try and jog my memory.
That's very cool.
And I'm like, this is really weird. I don't remember this. I actually said those things. Wow, that's gone. You know, and it was funny you weren't on the cruise, but there was a Walton's cruise and, John Boy couldn't go, so I was asked to go up on the cruise. Thank you very much, Ray. And and I will say that we sat down there, and it was fans versus cast members, and it was trivia night. And I honestly thought we were seriously going to lose because all of us were like, I don't know. And somehow we pulled it out of our hat.
I can't believe you won.
The cast members won.
You did win.
We did.
Good for you.
Yes,
I can't believe you guys won.
Do you remember Battle of the Network Stars?
You were on it. I wasn't.
Oh, I feel really bad for bringing.
Oh wait, or was that? No, it wasn't.
No, they did that.
Hey, maybe no one noticed.
What it's called? Oh yeah, we were against Love Boat dancers.
Yes,
and I thought for their one step, I take three. I got nothing.
Oh, the Love Boat. You guys were against the Love Boat.
No, it was Love Boat and Flip Wilson.
Yep.
Was that Battle
and we had
Network
the Hulk
Star?
On our team because he was
Battle
on CBS.
Network
Hold on, this might not have been
name.
Battle Network Star. You might be
it
dreaming
was something
this.
Else.
Are you dreaming this?
No. It was another like, name, though.
No. She's. I think
like
she's
Bill
right.
Cosby
I think
was
she's
there.
Right. I remember battling Joe Whelan.
Is this true? Is this true?
Yeah, I remember.
Are we on the same show? Because it was Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
Us.
Mm-hmm.
And Flip Wilson / the Love Boat Dancers.
Hold on. There were Love Boat dancers?
Yes, and they had very long legs, and there was no prayer that I was going to make it around the track in the same time as
Who
they did.
Who were the Love Boat dancers? I watched the Love Boat. I don't remember any dancers.
Just say Flip Wilson needed some backup, so he pulled it out of the hat.
Flip Wilson probably traveled with some dancers. Yeah. I can see that. Flip Wilson deserves some dancers. Good for him.
Yeah, it was... Really? You were on that with me? Dang, my memory stinks.
Damn, little brother.
We had a great time on the show and the Waltons was, I keep asking you this. You've skirted this financially. Did that change the family, the dynamics of making that kind of money for the year? You'd actually been on a show before and you've been pretty regular on Days of Our Lives. So I guess not, was it like better money? I hate to ask an actor who's not supposed to ask money, but this is like 34 years ago. So screw it.
I mean,
as a kid, as a 12-year-old going...
That's what I was going to ask.
I'm making like $1,200 a week.
How does it change your life as a kid? Do you all of a sudden, when you do go back to school during the hiatus or whatever, are you all of a sudden, I mean, you're not driving, so it's not like you bought yourself a car, but it's like, hey, who's the pimping kid that just walked into the school that hasn't been around?
Lot of money went into being in the industry. You know, and that's what I remember is, you know, you had on Days of Our Lives, I had to buy my costumes. And we had to bring in like five options for them to choose from the costumes.
You had to buy your own costumes?
Yes. And bring them in and they choose. And I think the ones that they chose, they would cover. But it was a constant. And I was on the show every day.
Is it too late to fire your agent? You had to, really?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
And we were driving from Orange County every day. And my mom was a full-time teacher. And so we had to hire a guardian. So I was paying a guardian to be with me.
So it costs you $14 a week to work is what
that's
you're
right. You can have, if the teacher doesn't have more than so many kids, you can use the teacher, but you could also have pass off the kid to another guardian.
But I was in Orange County, so I had to have someone drive me to and from and stay with me in LA.
Wow. Yeah.
The only time my mom took off was when I was on the Waltons. She took a year off of teaching. Mm. But other than that, I always had a guardian until I was on a show, and I was 17. And for the first part of the show, my sister was my guardian, but we paid her to be my guardian. And then we asked for the editor to become my guardian close to the end. Yeah.
Wow. I remember on the Waltons, my mom had always taken me to sets before, but my stepdad started taking me occasionally.
Oh, my gosh.
Here and there, my stepdad D, and he'd like start, you know, playing backgammon with the rest of the moms and the crew and stuff. But it was that we broke him in on like – that sitting me. There was no supervision. That's probably why I was more of a brat, I think.
Yeah, you didn't have a whole lot of supervision.
No, there was not a lot of supervision. Gus, could you supervise the show for 2 minutes? I'll be right back.
Yeah, sure.
Please continue. I literally have a bladder like a hamster and don't have another song for a quick break. But I want to continue talking and I want to get into the time that we spent on the Waltons and what you've been doing since then. I'll be right back. But Gus, please continue.
Let's talk about Keith.
Almost immediately. Okay. Is he gone? Is he out of earshot? Is he out of earshot yet?
No, he's not. Can't. He's not gone yet. He grabbed the key. He's shutting the door. Okay, well.
Got 10-1 odds, by the way. He leaves the key in the bathroom, which is going to make my next half hour very difficult. Here. But. Thank you.
I'm handing him my water bottle.
There is a reason I gave that away immediately. Absolutely immediately, by the way. So, you haven't seen Keith in how long? How long has it been?
The last reunion we were at was probably 11 years ago. We probably haven't seen each other in 11 years.
Wow.
And it's funny because every time we're together, it's minus that moment when I was 15 and I was with my long-lost brother. It just feels like we're back together again. And without the sibling rivalry, you know, so it's really fun because when you've experienced a show together like that, there's something unspoken about the relationship you have and you become family for whatever time you're on that show.
I believe it, especially at that age when who else are you going to pal around with? Who else are you going to school with? And you guys joined a cast that was already together for...
Right. And we were as close as age as anybody around us. Like you said, Cammie was... Well, I really looked up to Cammie like an older sister and I... would on the weekends sometimes go to her home and I was really just soaking in who she was as a person. Keith and I were the closest in age and it was a really trying time for me in my life. I know Keith's going to get into it, but, I was molested during this whole time while I was on Days and, the Waltons. And it was around that time where I started to realize I didn't want to be around my perpetrator. And so I was really grappling with that. And there was so much going on outside of the show.
So you wanted to be at work as much as possible.
I wanted to be at work.
And nobody,
absolutely.
Did anybody else have any idea?
Nobody had any idea.
Until, if I can ask how
I was
long.
Actually 25.
Nobody had any idea until you were 25?
No. Wow.
I was about 22 or 3 when I first told my family. About what happened to me when I was a kid. It was a family, actually.
What made you tell people? You want to wait till 23 or 24?
Well,
and then question for you.
Yeah, it's funny. Really weird situation. I had an uncle that was just a few years older than me, kind of like a bigger brother. And, I want to say much more innocent than I think, you know, a lot of kids go through. But there was absolutely some stuff that's so inappropriate and something I couldn't tell anybody. Was threatened. It was like, you tell, I will kill you.
Is that what he said?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is the kind of, you know, the uncle's bigger and can, like, pin your arms down and typewriter on your chest. And you're like, okay. So I don't tell. There's bribery. I got, like, you know, Vegas, like, roulette and crap. This whole, like, box of games of dice and chips. And it was like,
just keeping
I want
happy.
That. And it was like, well, do this and I'll give you that.
So totally private. And still, you know, friends, or it's my uncle. So after, you know, years, and I said, no, I ran away from home when I was 16, right before Adventures of Babysitting. And I actually ran away and went to him. And I was like, you know.
Really? You went to him?
Yeah, because it was like, there's a thing happened when I was like 8, 9, 10, maybe as old as 11. I don't think after that anything happened. But didn't address it then. But years later.
Did you forget it? Or did you always know it and just kind of went, well, I don't have anything to compare it to, so it seems kind of normal.
No, it's something you care. That's the thing. It was funny. I went to visit The View, and Joy Behar, they're talking about child molestation. They're talking about death penalty for these molesters. And I said, well, it's a life sentence for the kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I don't know about that. I mean, it's murder, but there's certainly a murder of like a soul thing, especially if you can't talk about it. That's the thing. I was always afraid to talk about it. And this is absolutely the first official time anything, at any press, any time that I've talked. I was absolutely, had an incident as a child, and I can't even really talk. I don't want to go into details. It wasn't as bad as a lot of kids. I've certainly read a lot worse, but it was something that I had to carry with, and I didn't have to carry it forever because my uncle came to me years later. I'm like 22, 23 years old, and he like shows back up again out of nowhere. And we go out to dinner and talk, and he goes, I just want to say I'm absolutely sorry, and I acknowledge what I did, and I apologize. And he was a kid. He was only 2 years older than me, so it wasn't – like,
oh, he was only 2 years older
yeah,
than
Yeah, two, sometimes
Not
three.
That that
it depended.
Makes it better, but
– No, but he's 11, I'm 8. He's 14.
Makes him
I'm,
seemingly slightly yeah. less predatorial.
Right.
As 2 years older.
And the balls to come and approach and discuss and
well, the thing is,
ask for forgiveness. Yeah, and I huge. Did, and a week later – he died in a motorcycle accident.
Wow.
I'm on the set of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, and the production goes, phone call, production office, go there now. And I got the news. And I even got a day off to go to the funeral in Palm Springs and bury him. But what's weird is that out of 10 years of nothing, you know, and I have to carry this privately, and then he comes, shows up, and there was a forgiveness and understanding, and just the confrontation of it and being able to talk about it with my perpetrator was incredibly healthy. And I went, what was it? Was it God saying, I want you to have closure. I want him to have closure, or this closure happens. And I felt really bad. I took him on my motorcycle, after dinner, and we rode and saw a terrible movie, RoboCop, like 2. I fell asleep. Awful. I was like, anyway, he's with a friend riding a motorcycle a week after and dies. And they weren't going fast. They just weren't wearing helmets. That absolutely traumatized. So I told my mom after that, a year or two after I finally was having a total breakdown. I was like, I'm blaming it on this. I go, yeah, you know, he touched me, or this or that or whatever. She didn't believe me. My mom didn't believe me. What? You're lying. You're full of shit. So I go to my grandma and I tell her.
That right there can't be a great feeling, by the way. For you to finally, it takes years to have the balls to say something like that, which can't be easy enough to say at any age. And then you finally say something, and then you get doubted by a person who should believe you immediately.
I'm like, fine. My mother doesn't believe anything I say. So I go to my grandma and I tell her at lunch, we're at the Santa Monica Pier, and we're eating there and hanging out. And I tell her, and she goes, oh, yeah, well, that. It's kind of going around in the family, and not surprised. Like, what?
Yeah, like it's not the flu.
Like, that's
it doesn't go around the family.
And you get angry at people that should have known or done something, and you're like, well, I didn't say anything, and you know, it was funny by that. I had what almost no child ever has the opportunity to do, which is to confront, have closure, acknowledgement, and you know, an understanding and a forgiveness before, you know, losing the person. So that was a really huge, that was a weird thing for me, but it absolutely happened to me, and it happens to
at least 1/4 of children before they're 18.
That's incredible.
A quarter of children.
That's
and the
shocking stat, a it, shocking stat.
It's funny, Corey Feldman had brought this up a month or so ago on TV in an interview, and he wasn't naming names, and he said, you know, there's predators around, and they're, you know, this and that, and they linger. On the outskirts, they corral around the industry, so they could be in various positions. But then now, just a week ago, I read he's writing a book.
And did you know he's going to name names?
He is already naming names, and they're investigating one of them at least at this point.
Let me ask this, and this is coming from someone who claims to have don't have the perspective and don't mean to ever ask a question that can be taken the wrong way. But what the hell is he waiting for?
There's libel laws, there's slander laws. Why didn't you say something then? What proof do you have?
How is this damaging somebody? Libel and slander are different when you're talking about yourself.
Well, one of the problems is, I mean, I think it's no secret the lifestyle that Corey has led. The question to ask is why has Corey led the life that he's led? I can answer that question very easily. He was molested probably by multiple people. It honestly was no secret that something was happening to the Coreys as we were growing up. And strangely, we just kind of dismissed it. And part of that was, at least for myself and probably for you, we had our own thing going on and everything was just so normalized. You know, we are all kids that are taught to obey and to perform. We are told by a director what to do, and we do it exactly like he or she has told us to do. And that's why we were being hired.
This pinch, this hurts. This thing hurt. The shoe isn't the right size. This light's in my eye. What's this wind machine? This dog's biting me.
Rolling. It doesn't matter if you don't like it, just eat it. And so.
Oh, eat it. Oh, well, food that's been with milk products that's been under the lights for like 6 hours.
Yeah. Minced meat pie on the Waltons. Hello.
I ralphed so much KFC one time on a commercial. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Buttermilk biscuits don't keep under 12 Ks.
Ugh. But that's one of the reasons why we're groomed by pedophiles. Is they know we are obedient children and we only aim to please.
We'll totally suck it up. We'll totally do whatever it is to make people happy.
Right. Because we are performers. And if you ask us to do that, we will do that. We've been told not to argue with adults, to just do what you were told. And that's the perfect thing for pedophiles. So they're just literally, whether they're in this industry, both of ours evidently were outside of the industry. We're just, you know, and they just, there's what's a grooming period is they're looking for those children that will keep their secrets quiet. And we're taught to say our lines. And also shows, especially comedies, are built around lies. You know, all the humor, if you really watch a comedy, it's all around lies and deception. And that's what creates comedy. So we're on these shows and we're creating lies and deception. So to live lies and deception behind closed doors when we're being sexually abused is just part of the gig. And I'm not at all slamming the industry from that standpoint, because like I said, it was my escape. I know for Alison Arngrim, being on set was her safe place, and being on the Waltons was my safe place.
I was safe from home and school when I was on the set. I would pray to get jobs. I would pray. I would pray to God. I go, please let me get this part so I can be on the set for the next couple of weeks.
And that was where I was too, and that's why. When I was fired from a show by telling the executive producer to take his hands off of me, I became suicidal. Because it was, again, that lie of, okay, you've stuck up for yourself and your sexuality and your body, and now you're fired. And now you have a condo in Westwood that you're paying for, but now don't have a check. You are let go of going to UCLA so you could work on this show. And what happened is I went on audition, and I was to all the executives, and they said, so why aren't you on the show anymore? And I said, well, in my head, I thought it pays to be honest. And I said, well, it looks like I was fired because I told the executive producer to take his hands off me in front of network executives. The next week, I got a letter from an attorney to cease and desist, and I virtually never worked in the town again.
Whoa. I mean, wow. You think that's the kind of thing Corey could be faced with if he names accusers?
I know of a young man right now who is afraid for his career, and because it's someone in the industry, and he's not telling because he doesn't want to ruin his career. And I think that's such I wish that, you know, we would all come together, those of us who experienced it and we're child actors. Now we can look back and think about how we can educate parents, how we can educate people on set of how children think and the various things they put in place to keep their jobs. And that they're really setting aside their personal opinions and their safety to keep working.
Well, I'll remind all parents of kids that, you know, want to put your kids in the industry. Or maybe you were a kid in the industry and you want to put your children. A lot of people come up to me all the time and they go, how do I get my kid in? And what age can I go to? How do I get him in the show business? And as a parent, you have the right to be within earsight and eyesight of your child at all times.
Right.
Period. Never. Don't let them go to take pictures. My mom told me this once. She told me this whole spiel about don't, no one go alone, anywhere room, no pictures, no this. You know, I can be there all the time. And one show, it was like Tales of the Red Hand Gang or something. And it was a series with like five kids running around Venice on skateboards or something and solving crimes. So I got the show. Very exciting. They're like, the producer's like, we're having a weekend at my house above Sunset Boulevard with a pool, wear bathing suits. And we're going to have just the cast, you know, come and talk. And the kids were playing bullshit with cards. And I'm like 6, 7 years old. And they're like playing bullshit. Already I'm like learning a word I didn't know before. And then they go, great, we're going to take just a group shot for the press shot for TV Guide or whatever. I go, a picture? And immediately I go, I'm not going to do it. So my mom's not there. No. And so I'm like, I'm not taking any pictures. No way. They're like, oh, my God. They just call my mom. They get her over there. And she had to be like, you know, okay. I was off the show. And, you know, it was totally kind of misunderstanding for me as a young kid.
Right.
Being told no pictures. But it was also kind of shady. Why are you doing a press event at this house with the pool?
Right.
Kids in bathing suits, you know, the next girl up for me was 10, the next boy was 12, the next girl was 15, the next boy was like 17.
Right. And the other thing is you don't know, and you've hit on it, that your perpetrator was 2 years older than you. And that a lot of us who have experienced sexual abuse, we have learned that one, and it's falsely, it's a big fat lie, that we are only good for our sexuality. And we're only going to have friends if we act out with them sexually. So for me, when I went back to normal school and I didn't have any friends, I thought the only way I could become friends with someone is to act out with them sexually. So I was one of those people. I was one of those kids that was acting out with younger kids, 2 years younger. And I thought I remembered all of those people, and I kind of looked back on their lives and realized that they were probably molested themselves because there were times that I was uncomfortable with what they were doing, and so they were teaching me something. But then I did an interview for Croatian television, and it was online, and someone wrote to me on Facebook and said, do you remember me? And you did, what do I call it? You acted out with me. You were 7 and I was 5. And,
wow.
And I realized, and I thought, I don't remember it. I mean, it is completely gone from my memory.
Wow.
And she was a girl who was somewhat of a misfit. And so I realized that probably for those kids who are misfits, they were the prey and I became the predator. And that when I thought of that, I thought, well, who was another girl who really didn't have friends? And I talked to her through Facebook and I said, could you please tell me if I ever acted out with you? And I had known from her, we have already met face to face, that she was molested by a neighbor. And I said, did I ever act out with you? And she said, yes. And for both of those girls, I was the one asking for forgiveness.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm guaranteed that your cousin.
Come on.
Yeah, but I still have a responsibility that, you know, I was using what I'd been taught sexually and acting out with others because I thought that that's the only way I could have friends.
Well, you wrote a book. You have a great nonprofit that addresses this.
I do. It's my life.
A Quarter Blue, which I think is brilliant. I felt great knowing I was devastated by the stat, but comforted by the company. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. Okay. You know, it's so important to know you're not alone. And that's paramount. I just was with a 10-year-old this week and went to the police department with her to report. And she had started to tell, but when she found out there was somebody else like her, it was like this weight had been lifted.
I grew up with one of the McMartin school kids.
Really?
Yeah. That was tough. But I felt there was a freedom once I told my mom, once I told my grandma. And I kind of got it. I talked about it in the car over with Gus on the way. He's like, I don't want to talk about this shit. But it helps me, Gus.
I don't know
honestly.
If that was an exact quote.
And
yeah.
the weight that it takes off to discuss it, even if it's years later, it's like it feels so healthy. I have to admit.
There's not a second of doubt at all. Nor would I want to take that away from either one of you at any point in time.
Well, and the big thing that we need to understand is that it is believed that 95% of sexual abuse is preventable through education. So if people could turn to people such as us who have been there and allow us to teach them the way in which our perpetrators, you know, built those relationships and the various things we thought as kids, they can really empower their own kids so they do not become part of that statistic. And that's why A Quarter Blue exists. We create resources to help educate everyone, and we're constantly trying to raise funds to fill in the gaps. Right now we have a book for preschoolers, a book for adults, teens. And we are fundraising for a book that's actually, its mock copy is done to encourage people who have gone through it, that it's called A Treasure to Behold, that gold, silver, pearls and diamonds, they've all gone through a heated process, and that's why a treasure to behold. And just because we have gone through something so hard, as we persevere, our character develops, and we become a treasure to behold because of the hardship we've experienced. So that's, you know, why we exist, is to, one, educate so it doesn't happen to another kid. Because if I could keep it from happening to any other kid, I've done my job, and I've used that what's happened to me to help others. But two is to let others know that they're not alone, because it is an amazing sense of relief. And it's funny, because I look back on those people in the industry that I felt a unique connection with, such as Keith, such as Alison Arngren, and it's like, dude, did we really have a connection? Because we were all had this second life where we were being sexually abused, and it was a secret, but we felt this sense of likeness. And it's amazing to look back on that and think, whoa, that's pretty wild. And I think that's probably why we had a unique connection. We just didn't have the language, because we were both keeping this massive secret.
I love how you said TV was all lies, that playing these roles and these storylines and the sitcoms revolves a lot around lying, covering up, mistaken situations. And it's nice to, that it's resolved in 23 minutes and there's a happy ending every time.
Yes.
That was a catharsis that we got to have as kids and be on these shows. And
there were no consequences, and that's what was confusing as a kid.
Very confusing.
Yeah.
Very confusing. But I love that you're empowering and you're talking about sharing and you're talking about growing and healing after this.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, really, really positive. We cannot not acknowledge that it's there.
No, because as long as we keep it quiet, we allow it to continue. And when we start speaking about it honestly, we are shedding light and we're just diminishing the secrets and the power over that.
You talked about education. What's the kind of thing, like, what's something that, you know, is really helping? I read an LA Weekly article last week. They had one of the most amazing articles on breaking up a pedophile ring, and it was online.
The Scooby-Doo one?
Yeah. Did you read that?
I sure did.
Was it the most terrifying thing you've ever read?
Well, this is my life, and so I read these things, but this one, they were pretty...
Well, the one thing that I saw was the most powerful thing, and it was the biggest warning for people, was when they go, oh, singles ads, yeah, it's great. You find a single mom with a kid, then you got access. And they're like, the less pretty, the more insecure they are, great, you got them. And so, you know, look for those kinds of things. If you can read that, I know, that's pretty heavy. But they're like talking about all of these strategies of how to get near kids. They're like, you know, instant family right there. And, you know, the kids from broken homes are already, there's a manipulation tool right there. I mean, it was incredibly heavy. It's the heaviest thing I've ever read, Gus. And this week's LA Weekly, the letters to the editor, 3/4 of them were about that article. You know, either, you know, thanks for the information. And they were like, this guy should be put to the death penalty. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
They're very strategic.
You said Pink Panther earlier.
Pink Panther was
one
of the
studies. So the Scooby-Doo thing, when I read that in the article, that made me think of that. When you said Pink Panther, I went, oh, that terrifies me. And of course they're going to use things for like video games, and, you know, for the kids.
SpongeBob was another one that they were using within that Scooby-Doo ring. Mm. And they do. They study children very carefully. So they have a place where we want to be, you know, and for a lot of us, we didn't have a place to play. So for my perp, he had the fun house where I would go, and I know this states my age, but he had a seesaw and he had the game Battleship. And at Christmas time, he put candy canes on his Christmas tree. And he was literally too good to be true. But it was the only place I was allowed to go. My parents were very overprotective. And I was not allowed to go anywhere except their home.
Ironic.
And in their home, mm-hmm. there were five adults. It was a husband and a wife and his aging mom and her aging parents. So it appeared like the safest place for a kid with tons of accountability. But what happened is, as soon as, you know, his wife greeted my mom at the door and let me come in, all adults except for my perp were gone.
Where would they all go? Where does everybody disappear?
I point blank asked her. We confronted them and I asked her. I said, you conveniently disappeared every time this happened. Where were you? And she said, I could get my calendar and find out.
I can get my calendar and find out.
The power of that kind of denial. And so I think it's really healthy to talk about it and bring it into the open. You know, the more people that do, the more that the victims will feel that it's not their fault. And absolutely understand that. And, you know, I don't want to denigrate, you know, the victims, but really, we were pretty cute. So. You know, if you weren't molested as a child, sorry, maybe you just weren't one of the cute ones. No, that's a horrible thing to say.
But what's horrible, Martha?
What's even worse is at 9 or 10 years old, the kind of industry family my parents were and me and my family were like, what studio executive do we have to find to get the show? I mean, that's how sick we were, you know, like acknowledging like, oh, we know it's there. We're like, okay, how do we, you know, make money off of this?
How do you manipulate the guy who's trying to manipulate you?
Yeah, but then you joke about it and you're in humor, and that's why I go for the humor. That's a point. At least I'm talking about it. And if I have to use humor to cover up my pain and talk about it, then at least I'm talking about it. I think that's a better step than, you know, pushing that deep down like a ditch.
How do people contact your foundation? How do they get information? How do they give money? How do they get any of that?
Our website is aquarterblue.org, which represents a quarter of children who will be left blue from the trauma of sexual abuse. However, education is the cure. And so again, that's aquarterblue.org, and there's access to our resources there. There's donation button, and we're on Facebook. As three things, 95%, which is a group of people coming together saying we will be part of educating children and empowering them. There is also Stopping Childhood Sexual Abuse. And then A Quarter Blue. Our blog is AQB blog.
Dot. You have a Rick Perry moment? You have a Rick Perry moment?
It's WordPress. I've just set it up recently, so put me on the spot. Keith's going to look it up.
I'll look it up immediately.
Set it up. Not used to saying it.
Yes, I have. I've written on it for about a month, and it's constantly having tools of talking about what's in the news right now. You know, the Jerry Sandusky case was coming out, and I felt that I needed to be talking about that in a manner in which let's focus appropriately. Let's not get sidetracked by the firing of quote unquote a great coach. Let's look at the issues that there were multiple boys, probably hundreds of boys, who were molested by this man who used his power and authority and created this nonprofit to have access to them. This is not new. This is what they do all the time. My perpetrator was very respected and helped in amounts of people that you couldn't even begin to imagine. And that's what kept me quiet. I didn't want to get in the way of what he was doing. And so I just kept quiet. And I didn't, when it came out that he was doing this to other girls, I realized I wasn't alone. And I would just start, first of all, I started working on myself. I didn't realize I was different. It normalizes itself. And so I first went to therapy. I thought 365 days, I will be healed.
Yeah, how'd that work?
That was 19 years ago, and my
maybe not 365 in a row.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I appreciate that I can say out loud to people and encourage them is healing is a process. And like you said, we are sentenced for life, and part of that is because we have different triggers, and part of it is we don't remember everything, and some of those memories will come up at inopportune times. But I'm so thankful that now if I have a trigger or a memory that takes place, my husband's worked through this with me, and both of us know what to do. And, you know, basically in 15 minutes, I have a quick counseling session with myself, and we're all good. But that's taken a lifetime. And this is literally my life with the nonprofit. And that's, if you will, a luxury I have that I'm constantly studying myself and studying others. And so I'm much more able to help myself. But I had a very good counselor.
And most people who have gone through what you have gone through haven't had the experience, haven't had the ability to be able to get to where you are now.
Absolutely.
Did you find that helping other kids is helping you too?
Well, it's what I have to do, you know?
Oh, that's good.
It's what I have to do. I mean, someone said is because I'm a speaker, you know, every opportunity I have, I speak around the world. I leave for India on the 3rd to be with orphans who have experienced this. And people said, is this therapy for you to speak to others? And I'm like, well, no, I shouldn't use an audience for therapy.
No, I like what you said about if you can prevent another girl or boy absolutely. From getting, taken advantage of, then that's really powerful. Just one other kid would be worth it. But if you're helping so many kids with this, I really love the organization. They have great events. They have poker nights. It's something that everyone moves together as a family and can accept. If these kids can feel accepted, then that whole thing, that stigma of don't tell anybody, you can talk, and then people can get caught earlier.
Not feeling like you're alone.
Predators can get taken off the market earlier and not have a chance to continue to,
Could you imagine if someone said to us as kids, if you tell your story, you're going to help this happen, not happen to other kids. You're going to be protecting other kids. We would have told our story like that because we were all about, you know, pleasing people. Yeah. And so if we thought we could protect other kids, we would have probably been more likely to tell our story. And that's what I try to empower kids. You know, you don't need to keep this quiet because you're not the only one.
That's the hugest thing. When you said a quarter blue, and that's the statistic, it was just the feeling that I wasn't the only one that had gone through this, you know, at whatever level. Just the feeling that there's other people that can understand and then kind of move on, you know? And I think that the only way to kind of move on is to discuss it, talk about it. You can't keep it to yourself. It's going to, you know, rot you away on the inside. It's absolutely not your fault as a kid. So, you know, have that talk. Start with the closest family and go on from there. And if there is a time element, if there is something that's happened recently, if there's something and you see a danger of someone, absolutely speak out and say something.
Absolutely. And you don't need to do the investigating. I mean, that's, we have to use the Sandusky case because here's a guy, he walks in on it and then he walks out. And here's that little boy thinking, one, he's completely embarrassed that another man saw what he saw. And two, he's just been abandoned. And that guy, instead of going directly to the authorities, kind of floundered because he didn't know what to do. This should be a call out to us as, what do I do in that case? And you need to know your local agencies in which you can call. Like here, we have community service programs. You have child protective services. You have your local police department. Unfortunately, all are not strongly equipped in how to work with victims.
No, if there's a fire in a school, everybody knows what to do. Everybody knows where to go. If there's somebody that's breaking into your house, everybody knows who to call.
No.
You can pick up the phone. You can call 911. Most kids at least know those three numbers.
Even worse, and oftentimes, it's an authority figure. It could be a teacher. It could be, you know, it could be something where you really are not impelled to tell anybody.
You don't know what to do. That is one emergency to use. I don't know if that is the right word, but one emergency where kids don't know.
Right. And that's why a quarter blue exists, is to help everyone, literally everyone, preschooler, parents, police officers, to teach them what to do through my personal experience and the experiences of others. Had a perfect example. I was at Starbucks on Friday, and I was just grabbing a quick cup and see this guy with his high school sweatshirt, talk to him about it. He's obviously a coach. So we start talking, and just through it, it led to him talking about a student, and he's a very much a hands-on trainer. And he said, oh my gosh, I just had this thing happen where I was, you know, telling this girl to straighten her leg, and she just, you know, just flinched back, and he said that her eyes like kind of went in two different places, like she was so uncomfortable. And I'm like, get with the program. Come on. We're just trying to make you a better athlete. And I had the next hour and a half was able to talk with him on how to go back to that girl and say, I'm sorry I made you uncomfortable. I want to train you, and I know it makes you uncomfortable for me to be hands-on. How can I help tell you what I want you to do as an athlete? And this is our back conversation, is probably she's experienced either physical or sexual abuse, because that's a body memory talking when she flinches like that. Someone, and I explained to him that, you know, like if you were approached from behind in your sexual abuse and someone comes up front behind you, your body's going to get tense because you don't know what's coming next. And so she obviously has a body memory going on, and he totally violated her space. But what I was able to do and what he received, and he was amazing, is to say, you know, you apologize to her, but what you're doing is you're saying your voice does matter and your opinions do matter. And I said, be ready. You know, you might be the person, because you're telling her that her opinions matter, that she ultimately tells you what's going on. Wow. But all of the coaches got back together and were talking about it. She, you know, it was basically they were all, she needs to get with the program. Are you in or are you out? And the problem is none of them has received training on how to work. And when he heard 25%, he was like, oh my gosh, I'm with 200 kids a day and I didn't know this. Yeah. And this is the problem, is schools don't want to let this information in because they're so scared. I don't know what to do if I found out a kid is being molested. I don't know what to do if I have a perpetrator that's one of my teachers. I don't know what to do. Please let us come in and teach you what to do. There are resources, and we can empower and protect children, but we got to have the guts to do it. And
I love that you're talking about it. I love that you have the the organization, the site, all of that education is absolutely empowering, not only for the kids, but for, to let the other adults to know the signs and to see that. And not only the signs of to watch out for somebody, but also to watch the signs from a kid.
Absolutely, because this mom said to me, why didn't I know? Why didn't I know? I said, you weren't educated. It's not your fault. You weren't educated, and you're like most parents.
It is apparently a widely spread problem that is just not talked about.
No, exactly. It's a tough thing to talk about. No, but it, you know, it is. It, you know, we want to say, oh God, you know, we don't want to talk about that. Like, why do you think the kids feel? They don't want to talk about it either.
Yeah.
But you know, welcoming the environment, and the more people talk about it, I think Oprah was really strong. It was one of the first episodes of network TV that the whole audience. She goes, and it was a setup, but you know, she had a special guest on there. She goes, how many people? Every single person in the audience. That was really powerful.
And all men.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, it is, I understand, because people do get very uncomfortable, and I very often have people not want to talk to me anymore once they find out what I do. And it is a taboo subject. And for women, it's uncomfortable. For men, it's that much more. And we need to get it to a place. What do we have to be shamed about? We did nothing wrong. We did nothing wrong as children. And we need to be empowered that we can tell our story without people thinking we're freaks and that they don't want to talk to us. And it's just the truth, and it is what it is. And if we don't start speaking out our stories aloud, we're just giving pedophiles more and more handles on pulling this off again and again and again. And if we can just continue, I thank you so much, Gus. Even though you were like, I don't want to talk about this, you let us talk about it.
Empowerment, it's healthy. You got to grow. You got to learn from it, and you certainly got to share. Don't be afraid to tell anybody. You're not going to get any trouble. You're going to get a lot of help, absolutely a lot of support. And, you know, I was shocked at the 25% stat, and I think it could go either way. I think the more people that talk about this, you could learn something even more shocking.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's really, really sad to think, but I also think that by having a conversation about it, we can help and educate people.
Certainly can. The more you talk about it, the more you help, and you're doing a wonderful
job. Yeah, thanks for doing the foundation and the book,
absolutely.
Too. How was that for you to write?
You know, remember my 365-day plan?
Yeah.
After that 365 days, I sat down and wrote my book. And then 10 years later, I picked it up and thought, girl, you knew nothing. And so this is what I know as of today. 10 years from now, there will be another edition. But it was a process, you know, in writing it all out and also figuring out how to write my story without creating a sense of people being uncomfortable reading it. I don't talk about the details of my abuse. I feel they're counterproductive and they can trigger people to have memories in that. I really want people to be able to read through this without, you know, needing to drop the book and go to their counselor. But as they've read it, they can still go to their counselor and work through it, but it's not traumatizing them by reading what happened to me. Like that one article you were talking about with Scooby-Doo. I mean, I was shocked that they wrote so much detail about what happened to the boys. I was shocked.
Yeah.
And for me and our organization, we are committed to not write those details because we feel they're really counterproductive and they teach people what to do.
There was the one tech that was matching up clothes with backgrounds and doing file sets.
Going, right.
This is either perpetrator or victim-based file set. And we can go, all right, this is all the same kid. And we can go through there, or this is all the same perpetrator. That technician, at one moment, he said, oh, the desensitization is ridiculous. And after a while, it's fatiguing and you have to take a break.
Right.
And he's looking at some pretty crazy stuff, but he's also extracting from that stuff that isn't, you know, sexual or revealing, so that they're going to be identification. They go to community members. They go to a school, a principal, and he's got 20 kids.
And they basically do a close-up on his face and ignore everything else.
And the principal
below.
Goes, I know who that is.
He's right there.
I know
there.
What class they're in. There he is right there. And they can then start to prosecute. Amazing. And the kid never, ever, you know, because a lot of these times there is a situation to be taken advantage of. The frame of mind or, you know, could be an industry thing. Could be just access. Being a neighbor, being a family member, being around, being a teacher, that is always something to be afraid of. I would always err on the side of it always is going to happen. So you frickin' take care of it. You watch your kid all the time. You know where the fuck they are. You know who they're with. You take responsibility for that too.
And you're constantly having conversations with about. It's not a one-time conversation. It's
sure.
Something you're constantly talking about.
You start something getting hinky. You're like, what? They're not talking about going over. All right, I got it. check this out.
But can't always watch your kid. Like you said, education
is key.
And
you empower them.
But also there's
things like slumber parties. Do we really need to have them? You know, you create access. You don't know who's in that house. You truly don't know what people do behind closed doors. And it might not be the mother and father. It might be the younger brother, the older brother. You don't know. And with the internet right now, it might not be a 3D person. It might be the internet teaching them.
We've seen the Catch a Predator. And that is ridiculous. The age that they think they're talking to, that means that they are at some point two real 12-year-olds and 14-year-olds, and that's brilliant.
Yeah, they're not catching these people on their first time.
Usually, you know, we used to be able to say that if you're a cutter, you had experienced sexual abuse. If you were a perpetrator, you were molested. Those lines are getting very blurred. It's becoming popularized, and two, the internet is creating such accessibility to these kids to be taught sexual things to stimulate them, and then they don't know what to do with that stimulation, and so they see the closest thing is their little sister's friend, and then they're acting out with that kid, and even though the little girl says stop, stop, that's exactly what the lady on the porn video did, so she must like it too. That's just what girls do, and nobody's walking these kids through what they see and really watching what they're seeing on the internet. And they have them at their schools too. And they have access at their schools. And we just need to be open with these kids, talking about relationships, what's appropriate, what's not. And also, if you're a husband and wife, showing appropriate interaction between husband and wife so they know what husband and wife does. So when the little kid says, let's play husband and wife, they know that's not what husbands and wives do. You know, and that's what we just need to be talking very open. You would be shocked with the conversations in my home with my kids, you know, because they're very open. But I know where the kids are going to turn for questions. And I'm thankful. You know, I got a call. Mom, can you meet us at 3:30? So-and-so wants to talk to you. My kids get in their friend's kid gets in the car to talk to me. You know, I've become the parking lot counselor, you know, but I love it.
Somebody has to be. Nice to know you're there then.
I am so thankful. And I wish that, you know, more parents would really set aside their iPhones, iTouches, computers, and just spend time unplugged. Because it'll be worth the investment, and your kids will be better protected from sexual predators of their own age and older.
Yeah, I never thought about the sexual predators of their own age, but absolutely.
Oh, it's, you know, date rape, and for kids acting out who have been sexually abused, I mean, it's right there, and it's so prevalent right now.
So great that you've done something about it and started, been going with a nonprofit, and thanks for the book, and thanks for telling the story and helping so many people.
Yes,
thank you very much. You each get your own copy.
And helping
copy.
Me. You helped me, Martha, because I never talked about this publicly.
Actually, this is our first time to talk about it. He said, one day let's talk, and here's the day.
I
thought, let's do it live on the air. I'm like that.
I have a secret. I don't feel comfortable. Let's wait till there are people listening.
There are masses.
Makes it a lot easier. Well, really great. You know, and on that note, and that is great, the healing and the positivity of it, you know, it happens. Let's deal with it. Let's talk about it, and let's teach people how to cope with it and how to, you know, be aware. I really appreciate you covering that. Thanks, Gus, for going with us there.
Just not there. I think he didn't want to talk about it, by the way. It's a little blown out of proportion, but fair enough. I just didn't want to finish an hour and be crying my ass off is all.
Hey, you know what? It is what it is. We talk about it. There's a time and a place to cry, but there's a time to be free.
Yeah.
And to realize, you know, I mean, you had an awesome experience to hear the forgiveness of your perpetrator, and those are the moments you celebrate, or it's the day that you wake up and you say, thank you that I'm alive. You know, and we celebrate the little things, and they become bigger.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Martha. We're going to close out tonight with just a great note. Everybody love each other. You know, pay attention. You know, absolutely take care of each other. Listen. If your kid comes to you, you know, listen. It could be something really subtle. You know, I really appreciate that you're doing that. And, you know, you really helped me too. Over the time, and it is a process. And so for me to think 34 years since we were working together and about the same time
Absolutely.
For me when something like this happened when I was a kid, and to come this long to really talk about it publicly, that shows the power of that kind of, you know, that kind of damage. And, so the kids do need protection and they need the tools, to be aware so that it doesn't happen. And if it does, they need to be able to talk about it.
Absolutely. And realize that they did nothing wrong. And there's no shame to be had, no guilt. They are innocent.
Like that. Well, you know, thank you everybody for tuning in tonight. This is our mini Walton's reunion with Martha Nix and Keith Coogan. I was Keith Mitchell back then, but I'm still a brat.
Same guy, different name. And let me say this, as somebody...
I suppressed all the bad stories that Martha is telling tonight. It's like, I don't remember that. I remember getting touched. I don't remember being a brat in school.
I guess it all depends on which ones you want to suppress.
It's kind of like I tell my son, I want my kids to be confident, but you've crossed the line into arrogance.
Yes.
And you were like one foot on both sides of that line.
Oh, no.
But it's because you're very talented, and my son's very talented.
I was a brat, and I continue to be a brat. But we'll let you guys go. We have a really great show tonight. We covered a lot. We thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you, Martha, for coming in. Thank you. Great meeting you. Thank you very, very much.
Go Niners.
Oh, yeah, before we leave, by the way, you got that in. You got that in, and I can't take that away from you. But for the third straight week now, by the way, Keith, give it to me, my man.
Go Giants.
Thank you very much. Jeremy, let me hear it.
Go Giants.
That's all I need to hear. I can't take your Niners away. I understand.
I realize that's another coast thing, and you're Niners.
Hey!
I was like, now I'm going to stick with the California team. I'm taking it back now.
Let me tell you something. Your microphone will be gone if we lose. You can't take that back.
Go Niners.
That you can have. You can have that. I can't take that.
Hey,
from you.
You know it's been a while.
I finally
don't have to say we're in the rebuilding years. It's very exciting.
First of all, what's wrong with the rebuilding decade? There's nothing wrong with the rebuilding decade.
We just weren't used to it. Okay.
You guys had like two
me
of
and
the
my
best
Bruins too.
You had two of the best quarterbacks ever at the same time. You're fine.
Yes, let me.
But.
Hey,
but
Gus, don't you have a show tomorrow night?
I do.
Aren't you completely pulling a Judas and starting your own show? What is this all about?
It depends. How's your back feeling? You feeling all right?
Something sharp poking me.
Yeah, that's my fault.
Tomorrow, 9 o'clock at SkidRowStudios.com.
Tomorrow, 9 o'clock, myself and Kike Castillo will be doing the weekly wrap-up, talking about basically just, stories from this week. Bunch of stories covering, probably more sports than you and I ever covered.
I will allow you to have the sports on that show. Because, I don't give a rat's ass about any kind of sports thing going on.
No, that sentence right there
was
more sports.
So are you having me on that show then?
If you're still here, yes. Depending on which team wins, by the way. But yes, if the Giants win, I you are so welcome to be here.
Okay.
But I did. I warned Kike. I said, normally we won't start with sports, but I'm either going to be extremely happy or a miserable son of a bitch to start off tomorrow's show. So good luck to her. Mm-hmm. And I hope your Niners come in a close second.
Oh, it's close.
Close is not the close second is not bad. That's not bad.
Ichiban.
Well, that's been our show. You guys have got to stop. This sports thing, this rivalry must end now.
In a week. Well, let me rephrase that. In about 24 hours.
Oh, okay. And you're right. If we do go any longer with the show, we'll be into your next show.
Yeah, I got
tomorrow.
Catch.
Thank you so much for this extra special episode of The Call Sheet. Our guest tonight has been Martha Nix. Martha Nix Wade, right?
I am a Wade now.
Cool. You are a Wade now. Gus is always great. Thank you so much for your help, Gus.
Great being here. Thank you
so much to everybody for listening tonight. And we leave you with another period piece from kind of Walton's era, Depression era. We have Slave to the Blues by Ma Rainey. Everybody take care of each other tonight. Thank you so much for listening. And rest in peace, Etta James. That's right.
Yes.
Oh, sad loss. Well, thank you, everybody. Good night. Take care.
Hey, son, no hey. Oh,